Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini, represented by CLNS Media. Today on the show, Coles Wicker is here. We are going to talk about the Bradley Beal extension. We're going to talk about the Warriors' decision to get rid of Alphonso McKinney in order to keep Marquese Chriss on the roster. We're going to talk about some preseason notes that we've seen, mostly Cole, because I've not watched a ton of preseason so far this year. I've kind of picked and chosen my spots a little bit. And then finally, we're going to talk about some NBA draft wings that we're intrigued with watching this year. So, Cole, how you doing, man?
Doing good. Excited to get back into this. I think the Kentucky blue-white game is tonight, as well as Anthony Edwards plays, both at 4 Pacific. If you guys want to check that out, I think they're on the SEC Extended Network or ESPN or some sort of thing. So it's nice to get back into them. I've watched a ton of international basketball. I've been able to catch up this year and, of course, watch some preseason. So we're starting to get back into things, man.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, we were talking about this beforehand. Like, I feel like, because I'm doing this big project where I break down all the young players in the NBA right now, that in terms of, I don't want to say preparation for scouting, because I've seen these kids enter in college more than probably I've seen a class since I've been doing this. I've been doing this like 6 years, and I feel really good about where I'm at on these guys. But in terms of just like having a list of dudes that I am looking to run down and see and scout and evaluate to see how they leapt over the summer, how their game has developed, I don't have that yet. So that's going to be my weekend, I think, is creating this big master list of players that I remember at some point that I have to create updated notes on, basically.
Yeah, and this is the first year I've really had both as far as all the priors. I've watched a lot of AAU, high school, FIBA, and then I have like this 250-player watch list. So this is like the first time that's ever happened. Usually I'm catching up, and you'll be like, cool, I don't want to talk to you about internationals until you watch them, because that's usually way later in the season, and this year I've already seen them all. So it's kind of nice.
Yeah, I am pumped at some point, even though Usman Garuba is a 2021. We're going to have a big fight on Usman Garuba, and it's going to be really
fantastic.
Fun because you are more in than I am, I would say.
Definitely.
Yeah, you are like, this is international Zion.
No, I am not like that. That's a effing bar, dude. But I really like him a lot, I think. We'll get into him much more in the future, but I love his defense.
He is your international Zion. It's fine. We can just say this. We can say things don't matter. Donald Trump's the president. We know that, like, you know, what we actually say doesn't matter. All right, so let's talk about the Bradley Beal extension. He signed a 2-year deal on top of the existing 2 years that he has left on his deal, added 2 years for $72 million onto that contract. Really, it's a 1-year extension because the second year in his extension is a player option. So the Wizards basically got an extra year of team control over Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal locks in $72 million potentially. Which is great for Bradley Beal. I woke up and saw this news yesterday, and I was like pretty genuinely shocked that this is what happened. And the reason that I was surprised was more because Bradley Beal has been adamant that the money at this stage is not as important to him. He wants to leave a legacy. He wants to win titles. He wants to be on a team that's a competitor. And me personally, I think that Washington is probably one of the two or three teams in the league right now that is farthest from competing for a title. So when you saw that extension, what was your initial reaction?
Basically that, and being surprised the weighing of winning versus establishing a legacy, really, and even contractually. It was a long shot for him to get Supermax if he made an All-NBA team this year. Probably doesn't happen, but it's not completely unforeseeable. Like, there are certain situations, if he just played out of his mind, even though the team's going to be so bad, probably not. But it is kind of rare to see an athlete have this kind of loyalty to an organization, frankly, that hasn't been very good as far as making procedural decisions. It's not like they're the Spurs and Tim Duncan is taking less because they're competing for a title. These are the Wizards who have made a ton of mistakes. And Bradley Beal is still loyal to them, which is it's cool to see. I'm happy for Wizards fans. It's a huge win for the organization from a PR standpoint, along with, of course, getting that extra year, as you noted. But I was a little surprised, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I think I saw a couple of reports. I think that Fred Katz and David Aldridge over at our site, The Athletic, mentioned that this is kind of a sign that he is buying into what Tommy Shepard is building. This is an entirely new front office. Obviously, they got some publicity for the new structure of their front office. So basically, this is Bradley Beal being like, I like the direction this is going. My thing, again, like it does just keep coming back to the idea of where we think this organization is long term and where Bradley Beal wants to be long term. Because it's not like this extension necessarily negates a trade. Beal can't be traded the rest of this year, correct? Just to confirm that, because you know the CBA about as well as I do, maybe a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah, so he can't be traded for obviously 6 months, and that takes you past the trade deadline. So it's not like the next league year, but he can be traded like the draft, for example. It's just after the Wizards finish their regular season.
Right. So essentially, the Wizards are getting an extra summer of being able to potentially shop Bradley Beal for while he still has 2 years left on his contract. I would imagine that next summer, just given the way that the free agency class is, given the flexibility that teams will have in terms of the cap and actually may not have in terms of the cap, I would venture Bradley Beal is probably going to be the most attractive player on the market, outside of potentially Anthony Davis or Giannis Antetokounmpo, if Milwaukee somehow like falls off of a cliff. I'm assuming, though, that he is going to be number two behind Anthony Davis.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think another factor is you're looking at the realistic trade targets and some of the teams that they deal with in theory. We talked about this on one of the previous podcasts. Teams like Denver and Boston potentially with that Memphis pick, and Denver with Michael Porter. And what do you need with those two? You kind of want to see how they play out. Like, how bad is Memphis this year? And you get time to assess that. You get time to assess Michael Porter potentially getting healthier and how well he plays too. So if you look at current iterations of deals, what trade is really moving the needle right now during like the next, you know, 5 or 6 months? I don't think Brandon Ingram is doing that.
Yeah, I would agree. Another thing that I got pitched on this idea was that like Bradley Beal is trying to lock in at a higher number in case the salary cap dips by like 15% or 10% in light of the issues that are happening across the NBA in regard to the situation with China. China is obviously a large driver in terms of financial implications for the NBA long term. Certainly the NBA is counting on growth internationally in a way that other sports leagues do not in regard to the raising of revenue. And obviously the salary cap rises and falls based off of how much basketball related income that the league brings in. So on some level, locking yourself in at this number is not the worst idea to me at all. I think that you can make a very real case for doing this if you're Bradley Beal. And like, I'm not going to sit here and say that Bradley shouldn't have taken the money. Like, get your money, whatever you want to do. But I just am still surprised based off of Bradley's previous comments, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And of course, getting that player option in 2022 to opt out and then have that 10-year Supermax essentially available to him, that is you know, big in this negotiation as well, as far as the longevity of the contract. So I'm just most surprised again by, I guess, committing to the Wizards. And like you said, maybe it is the new front office and he really believes in some of the steps. I haven't been as convinced. I mean, rewarding Thomas Bryant with a 3-year contract for his work ethic, I think that does set good precedent for the team. But I wasn't a fan of the Rui pick where they picked him. But maybe Bradley Beal has seen, he's obviously seen much more of the inner workings, and maybe he just feels better about the trajectory there.
No, I mean, like, the game that I've been playing on a couple podcasts that I've been on and a couple of just conversations I've had with media members, people around the league, etc., is like, who is Washington's third best player this year? I think the answer is probably like Ish Smith or Thomas Bryant, depending on which one of those two you think is the second best player. And that is not ideal, because Ish Smith is like a seventh man, eighth man. Thomas Bryant, I think, is probably something like the 30 to 40th best center in the NBA. I mean, like, maybe you're betting highly on Rui, which, you know, you're lower on Rui than I am, but they still took a guy that I think I ranked 17th or 18th on my final big board at number 9. So, yeah, I'm very skeptical. I remain very, very skeptical of this entire thing.
Yeah, and I think actually for me, maybe Davis Bertans is their second best player, which, again, not super great. But you at least know he can shoot threes at volume. Pretty smart player. So, I don't know. Like, Brad Beal is great. He's a great player. No question there. But he's not the kind of floor raiser via an initiator or something that just you run all your offense through that heightens this team to like the seventh or eighth worst team in the league. Like, I think they're pretty squarely in the bottom five.
Well, and with Beal, I mean, that just lowers his efficiency, because part of what makes Brad as good as he is the ability to play off ball and the ability to play next to a guy that is ball dominant. It's not that Bradley can't handle the ball. He's very, very good as a initiator, but I would guess that he's going to have to do that an awful lot this year, while being surrounded by guys like Ish Smith, Davis Bertans, who's a very good shooter, as you mentioned, but Rui, Troy Brown, Jan Mahinmi. If you told me like Jordan McRae and Isaac Bonga and Admiral Schofield were getting like real minutes for this team, like, I would buy that. But they're not going to have much spacing for Beal to really get what he wants in terms of getting into the paint and getting efficient shots at the basket. I think teams are just going to collapse on him. So he's an incredible shooter and he can create that shot whenever he wants. I do just wonder what he looks like on this team this year when they are just completely bereft of NBA starting caliber talent.
Yeah, on both sides of the floor, really. I think defensively, they're really going to struggle. Their front court defensively, not good. You know, Ish being the size that he is, I just don't see a recipe
still
for them
figuring out defense. I mean, Bertans is, you know, not the best defender. If CJ Miles gets healthy, he can at least execute a scheme just because he's veteran and he's experienced. But I don't feel great about CJ Miles in his 30s defending. Mo Wagner, I think, was the worst defender I watched in the NBA last year. That's genuinely not an exaggeration. I mean that when I say it. He was a disaster for the Lakers. Like, Isaiah Thomas is going to get minutes at some point here for them, just because realistically they need someone to play point guard other than Ish Smith. So it's, this has a real chance to be a bottom five defense and a bottom five offense in the NBA, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So in regard to just Washington and the way that they're building, this is an unmitigated win. Tommy Shepard, this is a huge moment for him, obviously, to be able to get Bradley Beal under another year of contract value. Just not enough can be said. There were a lot of people around the NBA that I spoke with that were super happy that Shepard got this job, obviously. And this is a huge win for him. Like I said, this is a big moment for the Wizards organization. And yeah, I think that at least for this year, the Bradley Beal trade rumors are done and they can just focus on basketball and trying to get better. And we'll see what they can do. But, you know, whenever you have $70 million tied up in John Wall and Bradley Beal, it's going to really hamper the way that you're building your organization.
Definitely a win for Shepard. I will say I don't really take a lot of what teams say publicly at face value. Of course, they're going to say, like, Bradley Beal's a superstar. Like, we're going to build around him. The actual odds that they build a contender around Beal in his prime are astronomically low. They would have to really hit on the next draft pick. They would have to swing a trade for another star. Likely John Wall would have to return to peak form. And even then, it's pretty suspect. So I understand them saying that. But I think to them, at least eventually, the best move is going to be trying to trade Bradley Beal for a high-value asset that has a chance to be a difference maker.
Yeah, basically what I've been told the whole way in regard to Beal is even if this extension didn't get done, they're not listening to offers for Beal. Like, they were not listening to offers for him, period.
Yeah.
Full stop. Like, they had no desire to engage in even potential trade discussions for Bradley Beal. So maybe they knew that that's why. Maybe they felt pretty good about the fact that they could get the extra year and give themselves more time. But I think that's ultimately what this deal does, is it just gives them more time to be able to figure out how they want to build this organization. And again, actually gives them continued value with Bradley Beal, because they can go into next summer and trade one of the top 20 players in the NBA with 2 years left on his contract.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's the way to go about this. I don't think Bradley Beal is the caliber of star. He's not going to become a top five difference maker, like a guy who gets you to the finals, for example. He's not that transformative level of player. So if he was that guy, if he was Giannis, I would understand their mindset. Like, we're not listening to offers. We have 2 years left. I just think the process is a little flawed, but this was obviously a big win.
Yeah. And this will be the last thing I say before we move on. I do think Bradley Beal has a real chance, though, if he gets into the right situation, to be the absolute best, like, number two guy in the NBA. His ability to play off of a superstar, space the floor, create as a secondary playmaker, solid defender. I wouldn't say he's like an elite defender by any stretch, but he knows where to be. He does a pretty good job against his man. This is a guy that I think genuinely at some point in his career is probably going to be a absolutely monstrous number two.
Yeah, I think he can be a legitimate number two. I wouldn't say the best. Like, I think Paul George is a better number two than he is. Just much better defensively, gives you a lot of the shot-making ability. Not as good creating for others, clearly. But yeah, I think he can be in that general range. It depends on who the number one is. That's always the question, is how good is your one? Because there's only a handful of real number ones. Otherwise, you need like multiple high-level number twos. I'm not sure if Beal is in that high-level number two if you don't have a true number one.
Right, but in 2 or 3 years, when Paul George is 32 years old and Bradley Beal is still 28 or 29, you're probably going to want Bradley Beal at this stage.
That is
like at that stage. So, yeah, that's what I mean whenever I say that. Like, Paul George is obviously better. Like, Anthony Davis is the number two guy in Los Angeles, is obviously going to be better. But as these guys age, not necessarily Anthony, but, you know, LeBron will obviously continue to age. I think that you're going to really... I think Beal is a shot to be the guy that you really want to try and acquire and be that number two as you're trying to build for a title. Like, if you're Milwaukee, like, sell the entire farm to get Bradley Beal next summer. But it's probably not fair to talk about trades with Bradley Beal now, just because Washington now literally can't trade him for 6 months. So this is an unmitigated win for the Wizards. Great job by Tommy Shepard. Let's move on real quick to another kind of strange roster situation that, you know, very few teams around the league actually have to deal with, because Golden State this year is hard capped at the apron and their salary structure is basically right up against it right now. The reason that they are hard capped is because they brought in a player in a sign in trade, obviously D'Angelo Russell, in the corresponding move along with Kevin Durant going to Brooklyn. Basically what the team has decided to do is waive Alphonso McKinney, you know, 6'8" wing, you know, kind of a guy who can move up and down the lineup a little bit, in order to keep Marquese Chris, who has had a standout preseason. I actually went back and, like, I've not watched a ton of preseason just because, again, I've been stuck watching tape from like the last few years of basketball to do this big prospect project that I'm working on. But I went back and watched like a good amount of Marquese Chris tape, and he looks a lot better than he has looked over the course of his career in Phoenix, in Houston, with the Cavs for a stretch last year. I'm still pretty skeptical of this move. Chris unquestionably had a better preseason than Alphonso McKinney, but if I was the Warriors, I would probably rather have the roster and lineup flexibility that someone like McKinney provides versus a Marquise Chris, who is a center, when you already have Draymond Green, who will steal minutes at center, Willie Cauley-Stein, who's hurt, obviously, and I would imagine that that plays a role in why they do this, Kevon Looney, Amari Spellman, you have Smiley Geach on the roster still. It's just a... You have five guys that can play center now, and I don't know that I love that in terms of roster construction when you basically have to have 14 guys on your roster the whole year.
Yeah, I totally agree. And Pascal, you can add, he's more of a four in the modern game, not as much a three, even though he's probably going to have to play there.
Right.
Maybe if he does get minutes. You know, you have Alec Burks, you have Glenn Robinson. That's a lot to put on those two players, I think, as far as wing depth goes. McKinney's not... you know, great by any means. Like, he was a huge liability at the highest levels of play. But as far as regular season versatility and just getting bodies on the floor, that's going to be the biggest thing for the Warriors this year is attrition. And just being able to put enough lineups and rotations out there that you don't really stress the primaries too much. I mean, they're going to be stressed to a certain extent, but you want to at least get some kind of veteran depth on the court. And that's going to be tougher now without him.
Yeah. I agree with you. I mean, McKinney is not a difference maker by any stretch of the imagination. He's a guy that you can put out there for 12 minutes and he'll eat those 12 minutes pretty competently. Like, he will mostly know where to be defensively. Like, he gets a little bit lost sometimes on defense, but he's a pretty good rebounder. Can shoot it a little bit, even though the jump shot kind of waxes and wanes. The big thing for me, though, is that you can guard him on multiple different player types. Like, he has pretty big bodies, 6'8", 220 pounds. If you need to throw him on a four, you can throw him on a four. If you need him to guard a two man and kind of chase him around a little bit, he's not great at it, but you can do it. Ultimately, I think a lot of this does come down to what you think Marquise Chris is. I am not someone that is a believer. I've never been a believer in Marquise Chris. I just don't love the feel for the game. Again, he's looked good in the preseason though. He can rim run. He can obviously potentially pick and pop a little bit. He's been more active defensively, but obviously the big thing with him has always been fouls and just rotationally ending up out of position regularly. And I worry that as we get into the regular season and teams are now playing their best players 30 minutes a night and their second best players, you know, 25 minutes a night, right? Or they're second lineup 20 minutes a night if they need to. Like, instead of Chris going up against higher level guys that aren't playing like super hard or lower level guys that are playing super hard, I just wonder what he's gonna look like when he has to be more technically sound in the regular season.
Yeah, I share the same issues. I've always been there as far as his general feel level. I know Draymond came out and was like, you know, you have to blame the situation sometimes, like with the Suns, for example. I do think that's true. I think when we analyze
players
too much, the emphasis usually goes on the player and not the developmental situation, where player development is probably the single most important component of all of this, in my opinion. I mean, you have to draft the talent. Clearly, that's probably the most important. But I think that's the most undersold as player development. But I think that Chris was even – there were a ton of problems even at University of Washington. I mean, this guy wasn't an ironclad prospect by any means. I'm happy for him. I'm happy that he's in this situation. I love him. Players like this going to a situation where you're going to be able to have, you know, Draymond instructing you, that's only going to help him. But yeah, from a positional value standpoint with this roster specifically, like Spellman, for example, adding him, like I just don't know where that role is compared to someone you already know that can give you at least a semblance of competence in the regular season as far as depth on the wing.
If you were the Warriors, would you have rather tried to do something like get rid of Amari Spellman and add a second round pick, even though you already added a second round pick to acquire Amari Spellman in the first place, to get off of the Damian Jones money and clear $400,000 in the process? Like, if I was the Warriors, I would have basically tried to, and they may have tried to do this, it wouldn't surprise me, I would have tried to have attached a second round pick to Amari Spellman, ship him out somewhere, keep Marquise Chris in Spellman's place, and then also be able to maintain Alphonso McKinney on the roster and maintain your roster balance. Maybe they tried to do that. Maybe that was something that they went down the road of and couldn't do it. But that's what I would have preferred to have seen them do. And, you know, essentially you're buying a second round pick for $2 million and they go for much more than that now.
Yep, pretty much. I don't really have too much more to add to this. I think, again, happy for Chris. I'm pretty dubious on the value here. And, like, he's not going to – you're not going to – if you have to depend on Marquise Chris in the playoffs, I think that's going to be a problem as far as all of the IQ and how the Warriors work. I do think he's going to get some credit for his preseason play as far as, like, these between-the-legs passes to Steph, and that was really good to see, honestly. Who knows how much of that is really rehearsed? Does it really matter? I'm just not a believer in his basketball instincts, so I hope he proves me wrong.
Yeah, totally agree. I don't know. Do you want to move to preseason stuff first, or do you want to do an ad?
Let's do Zion really quick, and then let's do an ad.
Okay. So Zion Williamson has had a dominant preseason. Probably the best stretch of three preseason games to start a career that has happened in my lifetime. Like, would you say that's right for a rookie?
I will say offensively, yes, his numbers are just absolutely, his finishing numbers are stupid. It's unprecedented what he's done on that end.
Yeah, I don't really care about the defense in preseason. I just don't. I'm not going to lie to you. Especially for a guy that's a rookie and is going to explore the studio space pretty regularly as it is. Zion's going to have to figure his shit out on defense a little bit just because he can get very, very scrambly often, where he'll just go way out of position to try and create a play, and it will create a drastic scramble situation for the defense that he's on in NBA spacing. Like, that would happen at Duke regularly, and in NBA spacing, it's only going to get worse because those scramble situations are harder to cover for. But the bigger issue for Zion is that his knee, his right knee apparently has an injury that seems, I don't know. I mean, it's not serious, according to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, but he is going to miss weeks, not days, according to that tweet. So where are you at on the Zion Williamson experience, given that this was probably the number one concern that people had for Zion entering the draft, is just how does this dude with this level of explosiveness, weight, power, and just... like, it's just totally new. We've never seen something like this before. So how does this guy stay healthy?
Yeah, this was absolutely the number one concern for both of us, and I would assume most of the league. Like, you get a lot of shooting issues, and yes, sure, like, he's going to have to shoot. Maybe he has to shoot. Who knows? But that wasn't the number one concern. The number one concern was the amount of force that he puts on his body with how violently he plays, how hard he plays. It's kind of like Blake Griffin almost, but to an even more extreme extent, early career Blake Griffin, as far as just this speed to power, incredible explosion. But the force, again, when you're carrying 280 pounds and you can jump, 44 inches off the ground and you land, it's just like that repeated motion and how much strain he puts on his body is something that has to be looked out for. And the Pelicans obviously knew this. I like the fact that they are being careful with him. You obviously have to do that. But I would, again, we talked about in the pre-draft process, ultimately you'd like to get Zion to lose a little bit of weight. You'd like to get him trimmed down and to better his long-term health. I think that's the most important thing for him.
Yeah, totally agree. In regard to his play this preseason, I've been just ridiculously impressed with how easy it has been for him to get wherever the fuck he wants on the floor. Like, it just does not matter. That hop step that we talked about as being his special signature skill coming into the draft, yeah, it's no NBA player has figured out how to defend it yet, and I do not know how they're going to figure out how to defend it.
I love what the Pelicans were doing with him, getting him downhill off the ball. So there's a lot of how is he going to score if he's off the ball? It's like, oh, maybe you sent a pin down curl and he curls off towards the rim and he gets downhill and you're totally fucked. That's probably how.
And you start him on the right side, start him on the right side of the floor all the time, get him going left, get him onto that strong hand. And it's just, he's a freight train.
Yeah, and people were, of course, chasing him over the top of screens, which is what you don't want to do. You don't want to give him an advantage situation and getting him into gaps. And I like the Pelicans' attack overall, getting him into space, making him a space player. When he has a crease to the rim, you're screwed. Like, he made Gobert look like JV on certain plays. He was just running right through him. And, you can't handle his level of power. Guys aren't used to his level of quickness. Even, Ben Simmons is very fast, top-line speed, but nowhere near as explosive or strong through contact as Zion is. Like, just nobody has played against somebody like this.
Yeah. Man, I hope he stays healthy. Like, it is, he is so genuinely special. Like, we saw some flashes of the passing instincts as well in the preseason. Just the way that he goes up through dudes. Like, he caused so many issues for Rudy Gobert in that Utah game just by, like, spacing him out to 18 feet. And then his first step is just so much faster than Rudy. I love the fact that the Pelicans already are playing him at the five. They're not doing any of this, like, we want to, like, limit his, you know, the wear and tear on his body. They're like, no, this dude's best position is the five. We're going to play him at the five. And they're not going to do it all the time. They're going to play centers. And, you know, they just drafted Jackson Hayes in the top 10. So Jackson Hayes is going to be a piece for them long term next to Zion, we would think. But I love the fact that they're already just deciding that Zion Williamson is a matchup nightmare against fives. We've seen it against the best defensive player in the NBA already in the preseason. He scored like 8 points on five possessions or something that he was up against him. It was a masterclass, I thought, in terms of utilizing Zion and in terms of just Zion's translation to the league.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a generational talent. We were saying that before the draft. I think people are starting to figure that out if they haven't already. More of the NBA-only guys and, like, the casual fans. When you watch him play, there's nobody like him. Like, throw the Julius Randle bullshit way out of here. This is someone we have not seen in this exact form before. And I only point out the defense because I don't want to come down and be like, this guy's been perfect. His defense has been trash. And it's a lot of it's been effort. The game is moving fast for him, I think. And that's to be expected. Yeah. And he's going to be good on defense. That's the thing is, like, you haven't really even seen the full arsenal, near the full arsenal with him, because I think he's going to eventually be an impact defender. But him at the five is one of those things that comes to the NBA that can legitimately change the landscape. Not only him as a player, but him and how as far as how he's utilized, especially in the playoffs as a five, I think that has a chance to really just alter the course of the league.
So one of my most interesting questions in the NBA this year is, do we think the Pelicans can actually make a playoff run? I think that Zion would need to play probably 70 games for that to happen. Otherwise, like, I just don't know if they have enough talent in the West. In the East, they would be like the five seed probably. But in the West, it's going to be really, really tough for them, I think, if Zion doesn't play, you know, at least 70 games. Where do you fall on the idea of the Pelicans making the playoffs this year?
I mean, I'm open to it. They're in the same tier. I have kind of a general tier right now outside of the top eight. I have Dallas kind of near the top. It's all confidence interval. So I think I would actually favor the Pelicans over the Kings. I know you're a little bit higher on Sacramento, but they're all the same tier for me. I think that something has to happen to one of the elite teams. There has to be some kind of injury, I think, to vault them up. But I do think they have a chance to make the playoffs. I don't know if it's great, but they're in that tier for me.
Yeah, like, I've got like a seven team tier, basically, where you're looking at teams like the two Los Angeles teams, Denver, Utah, Houston as the top five for sure. And then you've got Portland, who I think is like kind of on an island, like on its own, right? Just because I think that we all want to just believe in Damian Lillard because he's given us every indication to believe in Damian Lillard, right? And then we've also got teams like Golden State, who, again, much like the Trailblazers, you just want to believe in their superstars figuring it out. And then after those seven, we've got that big group, right, of San Antonio, Dallas, Oklahoma City, I think is going to be really competent. I think the Timberwolves offseason went like a little bit underrated too. They now just have like 10 competent dudes. Like Jake Layman is pretty good at basketball. You know, Jordan Bell is going to be a really nice fit potentially with Karl Towns in like athletic lineups. Noah Vonleh is probably the best backup center in the NBA. Like, there are just so many little moves that Minnesota made that makes me think that they're going to really compete. And then you get to that group of the Kings, the Pelicans, and Dallas. And those are the three teams that have the star power. Like, the Kings have De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield, Marvin Bagley. The Pelicans have Zion and Drew Holiday and all of the great players that they acquired this summer. And then Dallas obviously has Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis. And I don't really know what to make of these groups yet. Like, I think that one of those teams is going to make the playoffs, and I don't know which one it's going to be.
yeah, for me, again, it comes down to injury. I have the Spurs a little bit higher than you do. I just think there's some, like, there is some value in just knowing how to win games in the regular season, and nobody does that better than the Spurs as far as maximizing their roster talent. So I just believe in them a little bit more. I think they're going to make the playoffs. Some people have them in the same tier as the Pelicans. I wouldn't fault that at all. I have a little bit more confidence in them. And with the Blazers, like, I understand. I don't really like their roster construction that much, just being honest, as far as, like, their depth, like having to rely on guys like Hezonja. They don't have their wing as far as wing defense anymore, getting rid of Harkless and Aminu, for example. And there's a lot of strain on the backcourt. I don't love Whiteside for, you know, at least a little bit of the season as far as a starter there. Playing Zach Collins at the four, there's a little bit more turnover there than I think they're getting credit for, but I just can't bet against that culture. Stotts is, again, one of those coaches that has a very established way of playing in the regular season, and you have the star power with Dame and then CJ. So I give them the benefit of the doubt a tier ahead, but I do think they could be the team that falls out of this. I think Zach Lowe wrote about this today, and he pointed out that they would, you know, they're more likely to make a trade than some of these teams, so that would factor in as well. They have some ammunition there. But the West at the bottom, I can see arguments for. I feel pretty confident right now, relatively confident, in the Spurs and then the Blazers being the 7th and the 8th. But if there's injuries to these teams, like if Golden State incurs an injury to Stafford, Draymond, like some of these teams that are just outside could break in.
Yeah, no, I think that's all basically right. You know what? Like, there are going to be injuries. We never account for injuries in things like this, and I think it's something like, I almost want to say that, like, it's between 55% and 60% of all totals in terms of, like, preseason content, either player props or team props go under, just because these things tend not to account for injuries, and injuries happen and throw off the whack of things. It's always going to happen, and we're just going to have to see where these injuries come, and it's impossible to figure out where they're going to come from now. So, Cole, we are not betting on basketball unless we're betting on the Bulls making the playoffs, which that might be a thing that I'm doing. But football is back, and we are probably betting on football, or at least I am. It's week 7 of the regular season in the NFL, and I'm really excited. You can get in the game by going to betonline.ag. You can bet on every spread, every total, every winner or loser. You can bet on who the first starting quarterback to get benched is. I believe that happened this week with Ryan Tannehill. Or no, I guess it happened with Eli Manning. You can bet on who's going to win the Heisman Trophy. You can get the fastest odds, updates, and payouts with betonline.ag. Head on over there or use your mobile device to join today and use the promo code CLNS50 and get your 50% welcome bonus. A minimum deposit of $55 is required to qualify for this bonus. Please go to betonline.ag. BetOnline. It's a great place to place bets. And as someone who does bet on football, especially on the NFL now this year regularly, it's certainly a terrific, terrific company. So go to betonline.ag, use that promo code CLNS50. All right, let's talk about some other preseason things we wanted to bounce around real quick. I want to talk about Tyler Hero just being like the best. There's just not really another way to put it. Like, he is just the most fun human being to watch play basketball right now outside of Zion Williamson in this rookie class. Like, he is just knocking down shots and talking shit to everyone in his path. And he's averaging like 16 points a game in the preseason, shooting like 50%. He is the most fun human.
He's definitely fun, and he's been really effective, honestly. I think he's surprising some people just playing outside of the construct of Kentucky, where you see a little bit more of the playmaking. Like, he has played more in pick and roll, has made some pretty fundamental reads that are pretty legit. I think he's always been capable of that. You're just kind of seeing it play out more on the floor. Excellent situation for him. I love that fit in Miami next to Butler, next to Winslow. I think he's going to be insulated at times defensively, which is good, but the shot making, he's made shots. He's got the best touch in the class to me. I'm not really surprised by really anything that I've seen. Plays with a ton of confidence and aggression, and that's something that a lot of rookies don't have right out of the gate, is that ability to just believe that you belong on the floor in an NBA game and playing with that kind of assertiveness. And we're seeing that stand out with guys like Hero and Nikhil.
Yeah, the assertiveness, I think, is such a critical thing. You're going to go through ups and downs as a rookie in the NBA, and how you react to it ends up playing such a pivotal role in how successful you're going to be. It is just absolutely so much fun to watch this dude who is 19 years old still step in with the most confidence and just be like, I'm going to score on you. There is nothing you can do about it. Fuck you. And, you know, that's it. Like, it's just what he believes. Like, he fights on defense. He is someone that feels like every single shot's going in. He's not afraid to let you know that every single shot's going to go in, even when he misses the shot. Like, he is just a super, super fun player. And I am thrilled to see where this goes. I have no idea where it's going to go, but I'm thrilled to see where it goes.
Yeah, he's going to get legitimate minutes. He might start for them, honestly, this year. I don't really know how they're going to formulate their rotation, but he's going to get legitimate minutes for them, and they really do need his shooting. Seen some, you know, pick-and-roll pull-up ability, a little bit of off-movement action. He's done most of his damage, honestly, from the perimeter. Like, he's gotten to the rim in preseason, I think, twice outside of last night, and both of them were against the Hawks because the Hawks have the most trash interior defense probably in the league. So I'm a little worried about his ability to get to his spots at times. He does have incredible touch, though, and that's why I was higher on him. I had him like 13 on my board, just because I felt like he had enough of that intermediate game with the runners and kind of like the trick shots to shoot over the top of guys. And he's really showcased all that.
Yeah. The Bulls, you wanted to talk about the Bulls. I have not watched any Bulls preseason stuff yet. So I will give you the floor on them.
Yeah, I just, they're actually fun to watch. And this is coming from someone where I forced myself to watch them last year because of Wendell, and I hated every second of it. And this preseason, you see the influence of Satoransky in their starting lineup, his decision-making, the passing, and just the general shooting ability, the two things that Chris Dunn historically have been the worst at as far as shooting and decision-making. Huge upgrade there. The progression of some of the other players, seeing Otto Porter in this system for another year. I just think they have a really strong starting five. I love Thad Young. I mean, we talked about him as like a fringe all defense guy last year, so adding his veteran presence who can play next to both Wendell and Lowry off the bench. Coby White, I was never worried about the shot. He shot the ball much better, a little bit streaky when he was going. I think it was last night he hit like six threes or something. I think he's going to be legitimate change of pace guard off the bench this year as far as pushing the pace, hitting some threes. I just like how their team's constructed, and we talked about this off air, and obviously you just mentioned it with the gambling piece. I do think that they have an outside shot to make the playoffs. If some things break down in the East, I would say they are the favorite to be like the ninth seed and move their way up. And if things go really right for them, I think they have the chance to make it outright. They're really underrated. I think they've changed in a lot of ways. The perception of them from last year to this year with like Boylan and stuff, they're shooting more threes in the preseason. I think they're going to surprise some people.
Plus 270 to make the playoffs, folks. Plus 270.
That's good.
Speaking of making like a million threes, Carson Edwards is God.
I love Carson Edwards.
Like, I think you and I had Carson Edwards. We were like among the few people who had Carson Edwards is like very clear first round pick, like right around like 20-ish on our boards, right? Like something like that.
I got a little crazy. I put him at 14 just because I was like, I can't really like, for me, you have to be able to explain things on your board. Now, like, I can't make a huge difference between like him and Coby White. Like, there are differences in their games, but as far as value, like, Carson can do a lot of the same things Coby White can do. And frankly, he can do some things better.
Yeah, like shoot on the move. Carson Edwards is an unbelievable shooter on the move. He like can run off the screens. He can pull up. He can pull up from 30 feet. Like, Carson Edwards is the most fun. Boston fans are going to love him. I am thrilled to watch him go off for 8 threes and a quarter at some point this year.
It was that game in the preseason was just incredible to watch in the third quarter. You were just like, holy shit, this is like the Virginia game all over again. Where you just
he made 8 threes in 5 minutes.
It's incredible. And they were like, some of them were hard, dude. They were like hard pull up, like 30 plus foot threes off movement quickly. He really does move well off the ball, though. That's something that like is an IQ thing that I think he understands how to get open. And he had the ball a lot at Purdue. We did see him run off screens a good amount, but I do think his basketball intelligence, not a good passer in that respect, but as far as like finding openings on the floor, I think he's pretty good there.
So Michael Porter Jr., we're finally getting to see him on an NBA court, which is great. I have not watched a full Denver game. I've gone back and watched like Michael Porter's minutes in two Denver games. What has been your impression of Porter so far?
I mean, I'm working from a very low bar from the last time we watched him in college. Remember the Florida State game where he was just he couldn't move. He looked like he was a 40-year-old on the court as far as he was so inflexible, very, very stiff in his movements, just could not sink down into a stance, had no speed whatsoever. So it's just good to see him more back towards the prospect iteration, you know, playing close to me in high school where I lived. I just like to see that. I'm not going to read too much. Like, of course, he's a difficult shot maker. He's made some good pull-up threes. I think he's had one really nice drive where he's able to get a little bit lower, get all the way to the rim. So for me, I just wanted to see the athleticism and like the somewhat of the fluidity. He's still a little stiff as far as an athlete, but he's much more the prospect iteration, and that is really, really good to see.
Yeah, totally agree. The flexibility is there. Defensively, I do think he's been out of position just a little bit too much. A lot of the writers in Denver have noticed that they feel like his energy level is really good. And I do agree with that. Like, I actually think that he is making a real concerted effort on defense, which is something that, like, I mean, we just haven't seen him do, really, even like at prospect levels. Like, he was just not a guy that really did it that often. So I like the fact that he is giving a shit on defense. I just do think there's going to be a learning curve in terms of like being in the right position rotationally, knowing what people mean when they communicate like on the backside with you and trying to like get you in the right spot. It's just going to take time, and that's fine. But I don't know that I would say optimistic on his defense, but I just like that he gives a shit on defense.
Yeah, I mean, that's the starting point, is having more of that care factor. The reads haven't been great as far as rotational awareness. That was to be expected. Like, this guy was not a good defender at lower levels. Like, maybe in like high school, he showed some flashes of rotational awareness as like the backline defender. I think he can do that stuff okay, but that's going to be more of a work in progress. I'm most fascinated to see how this guy gets on the floor this year and what capacity and what role, what position, playing next to who. You know, the Nuggets are going to start Millsap at the four, probably Will Barton at the three. You have Jeremy Grant, who is a really good addition for them. You want to align some minutes with him and Jokic. You have Mason Plumlee as the backup five. Are you going to play Porter, you know, at the backup three instead of Torrey Craig, for example? Where are you going to move him around? How is he going to get minutes consistently? That's probably one of the most fascinating storylines to me this year.
Yeah, it's weird just because, like, Michael Porter in a one-on-one game probably beats Torrey Craig, what, like 11-3 or something?
It would be murder. Yes. Yeah.
But for this specific Denver team, Torrey Craig's, I don't think he's maybe, like, more valuable than Michael, but there's, like, a very real case to play Torrey Craig in lineups with like Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Jeremy Grant, and Nikola Jokic, right? Just because while Grant is a good defender and is athletic and tidies up for people's messes, there are also just a lot of defensive holes to cover up for, because the backcourt, Jamal's not a great defender, and Gary, he is like a good defender, but is smaller. Like, he is 6'3". And then Nikola Jokic, obviously, I think gets underrated defensively just because he is always in the right spot. It's just also that, like, he's limited on that end. Having Torrey Craig out there does really help them just organize their lineups defensively in a way that I'm not sure that having other guys out there does.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's kind of like their big wing defender, frankly, on this roster. Like, Barton's not going to be doing that. Like, you have to rely kind of on Harris to do a lot of that, and he's on the shorter end. So I think that, you know, Torrey Craig has a role to play on this team. There's just there's some trade-offs on this roster. A lot of people think Michael Porter's a straight four or even a five. I tend to think more of a four. But
yeah,
I
agree with you. I think he's a four.
Yeah, ideally, I think that's his right position. And honestly, that's one of Denver's deeper positions with Millsap, who I still think is a very good player. He executes the scheme defensively, especially incredibly well. I'm really high on Jeremy Grant. I thought he was actually really underrated in the playoffs last year for Oklahoma City, as far as he can knock down catch and shoots. And defensively, they have not had somebody like this before that I've seen, as far as a guy who can really cover ground, has great range, has the length to block shots, can switch on the perimeter. He can switch everything. I think Jamal Murray was quoted saying that, like, whenever he sees Jeremy Grant coming around on defense, he just switches because he knows that Grant can hold up against basically anybody. So I just think that Michael Porter's road, there's going to be a lot of people who are like, this guy's a star, right? We've heard that so many times. He might end up being that, but I don't think he's going to jump into the situation and just be like a dynamic rotation player right away. I think people have to temper their expectations a little bit.
Especially early this year, I think, for sure.
Yes.
All right. So let's do you want to talk about Dallas real quick? I have not watched any of Dallas preseason, but I know that you wanted to just quickly mention them.
Yeah, I think that they're getting a pretty strong push to be like the eighth seed from the West. And I think there's a lot of foundation to that. Like just watching them, they do have a clear style of play of how they want to execute. You know, Kristaps is going to be able to shoot above the break threes at volume. Hasn't even been making them at a good clip yet, but I think that's going to come. Obviously, his rim protection is huge. They haven't played Dwight Powell yet, who's critical to their rotation. As far as his dive gravity, I'm pretty high in Kleba, but even had guys like Kevin Pelton say they watched him. I think he watched the Clippers game last night and said that this team is going to make the playoffs. I can see it. I just want to note that I think there's a lot of trade-offs on this roster as far as who they start. Like DeLon Wright's going to start at the one. They need his ability to guard point guards, but not the best off the catch shooter, even though he's improved some. That's going to be critical for him this year, is knocking down catch and shoot threes and being able to initiate at least some offense. What do they do with the three? You know, Justin Jackson, the better shooter, but not good on defense. Really his struggle getting around screens to me in the preseason. But Dorian Finney-Smith, they've played mostly at the four, and he just can't make anything off the catch from three. So I don't know if this roster is complete enough. Like, I like Seth Curry off the bench. Again, I love Kleba. If he starts, if he comes off the bench, he's going to be critical. Best team defender on the roster, but I'm cautiously optimistic. I do think it's going to have to take at least a mini leap from Luka to do that, and he looks a little quicker this year. He has lost some weight. You know, his acceleration has been a little bit better. He had the corner on Kawhi. He just beat Kawhi clean off the ball last night. He could have driven all the way to the rim. I would like to see him use his kind of shoulder to keep Kawhi at bay. He ended up taking like this fadeaway jumper, and he made it. But he looks a little bit better as far as his change of pace, which is great to see. And he actually stuck with Kawhi pretty well on defense last night, too. But I do think it takes a little bit of a leap from Luka for them to be the 8th seed, but I definitely think it's possible.
Yeah, I'm interested to watch them this year. I don't have any takes beyond that, so let's just move on. We're going to have two recurring segments. For the first time, the podcast will have segments this year in regard to the NBA draft. So the first one we are going to delightfully call Bill Self Rumspringa, and it will refer to my newfound fandom of the Kansas Jayhawks after they decided to release a video with Bill Self wearing a massive Adidas logo while going to like a record store and introducing Snoop Dogg coming to Fog Allen for their Midnight Madness event, and then them having their Midnight Madness event with Snoop Dogg having pole dancers out in the middle of the floor and having Snoop Dogg shoot a money gun right at the players. It's just the best thing in the world. I don't think Bill Self knew about the stuff that happened or like had any idea of what was going to happen during the Snoop Dogg performance. I will say that and give Bill Self the benefit of the doubt, if only because college basketball coaches most certainly do not know what's going on in terms of like game ops. But oh man, I am all in on the Kansas Jayhawks, rooting for them to win the national title. I want all of the legacy college basketball media folks to just have a fucking meltdown.
Yeah, we need friend of the podcast Chris Stone to be more of a presence this year now. Like the ultimate Jayhawks fan, I need him to be more vocal on Twitter after this.
Honestly, I might like just bring on Chris for these like Bill Self Rumspringa segments. I will edit in like 10 minutes of Bill Self Rumspringa with Chris Stone every week because I am so excited for it. And then our second segment is going to be LaMelo Ball update. And Cole, I know that you have watched LaMelo Ball since we last talked about LaMelo. Where are you at with what you have seen from him in Australia? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm getting higher and higher on him, and I already had him three. He probably stays there until I see more from Anthony Edwards, but I really like him a lot. And he's starting to show more physicality. Like he did that the last game, more interior defense physicality, really fighting bigs, boxing guys out, making at least an effort to do that, and you know, attacking a little bit better downhill, running into bodies. He's been very soft in the first couple games as far as avoiding contact, not good contact balance going through. Strength is a big issue for him, but I do like to see that mentality change. I just love the talent. His ball handling, he has so many moves already that he just get underplayed. Like he's a really, really good ball handler, and he's looked faster to me. His burst and his first step have looked better than I expected on this stage. They really pop. there's just a lot of things he does. We know about the passing as far as the instincts, the IQ. Very good improvisational passer. I'd probably say the best in this class, frankly. Like, he just sees things a little before they happen, and that's a rare skill. That's like a Luka Trey skill. I'm really high on him, man. I'm higher on his defense just because he has the things that you can't teach. He makes some great rotations. His hands are outstanding. He gets a lot of steals. He's a good playmaker. I think most of his issues on defense are consistency as far as effort, and then the technique is very poor for the most part, but I'm a huge fan.
We disagree. I have been less enthused by Melo than I was during the NBL Blitz. He is shooting 37% from the field right now, including 7% from three. I believe he has made 1 out of 13 from three so far. shooting is like a very real concern for Melo, I think. Even in Lithuania, like, he didn't shoot the ball super well from distance. He's always had those funky shot mechanics. They certainly look better now, but it's still something of a push shot. Like, if LaMelo Ball doesn't shoot it at a league average or better clip, I think there are very real translation concerns.
Yeah, I'm more optimistic on the shooting just because I think he has, like, sub-elite to elite level touch, and we've seen guys like, even like, I don't want to use Lonzo as an example because very different players, but even when we see him tweak his mechanics and put his kind of shot line more central instead of like the flare, I think Melo's already made strides there. As far as when you watch him, you know, 2 years ago, we talked about this on the last podcast, but his elbow was way out. He's gotten that in a little bit more. It still flares for sure. I don't love his mechanics. I don't love his balance. And I think when you talk about his shooting, you have to kind of break it down into what kind of shots are we talking about. With his feet are more set, like off the catch, for example, I think he's fine. These more difficult, high degree of difficulty momentum shots where they're pull-ups off the dribble, those are going to take time, I think, to really harness in. Like, he's not there yet as far as like footwork and balance goes. Like, I found like his foundation shooting, like, he'll just like kick his leg out at times. Like, he legitimately did a high kick on one of his shots the other day. So I want to see a little bit less input. He had one shot in his last game. It didn't count because I think it was like a travel or something, but he shot it after the foul call was made, and he had almost no lift on his shot. And I thought that looked actually really good. People think that you have to like jump really high to shoot, and that's not the case. A lot of the best shooters don't have basically any. They just rely on upward momentum. And I would like to see LaMelo kind of tinker around with that. But I'm higher on his shot probably than you just because of philosophical differences with touch and like established three-point shooting, for example.
Would you rather fix an elbow flare or fix a shot line? I would rather fix a shot line. I'm just going to say that. I think it's going to be easier to fix because I think that it doesn't totally mess with the rhythm of the jumper necessarily to fix a shot line, just moving it over to the right in the case of Lonzo or in the case of Jarrett Culver, for instance. In the case of an elbow flare, I do think that it can mess with the rhythm a little bit, and it's a little bit more of a full scale, like, I don't want to say it's a rewrite because Melo has taken steps toward fixing it already, but I think that it's a more substantial concern.
I think that's fair. Just again, with kind of how LaMelo shoots the ball, having his hand over the top of the ball and how he brings it up, I think it's going to flare a little bit. Usually you see sometimes like elbow flares can be associated with not turning your feet and not having that tilt and like angling, but he already does that. You know what I mean? So that's kind of what's always been fascinating about him is sometimes like a guy's like a 10-toe shooter where they're completely facing towards the rim. You see that less and less these days, but sometimes you're just like, oh, if you angle, that'll get the elbow in. So he's not doing that and he already does tilt his feet. So I could see that argument. Again, I'm just looking at a guy where I care more about shooting touch than anything else. Like, that's like my number one thing with shooting. So if he can iron out some of the little mechanical issues, I think he has that level of touch where he can be at least an above average shooter. But I do agree right now that there's a lot of room to improve.
Yeah, a good example of shooting or fixing the feet and pointing them toward an angle and thus fixing an elbow flare, Zion Williamson did it recently. He created more of a set shot basically and tilts his feet toward a 45 degree angle. Sorry, I got a phone call. Toward a 45 degree angle, basically away from the basket. So it's fixable. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it is doable, but yeah, like you said, like, Melo already does a lot of the normal fixes for it. So I think that on some level, he is going to have to just, like, I don't want to say completely reframe the jumper, but like, there are real significant mechanical tweaks, such as bringing his hand farther beneath the basketball.
Yeah, I mean, and that's how Drew Haaland kind of teaches it. You see a guy like RJ who really jams the ball behind, I mean, jams his hand behind the ball and his wrist to kind of get it cocked already. A lot of guys don't do that. They do more of the rotation. They have even the ball on the, they have their hand on the side of the ball and kind of rotate it as they bring it up to relieve some tension. I think that stuff's really important, but like, I do think that for me now, like seeing so many guys in the league just tweak their mechanics a little bit. And of course, LaMelo has to probably do a little bit more than a lot of these players do. And that's kind of the concern point. But I look at his touch and I know he has that. He's shown that consistently. Like some of the shots he makes, some of the floaters, like guys don't make those shots on the move like he does. So I guess that's what I'm buying that as a rare skill. And I think that's the one that you can't really teach. So that's kind of why I'm a little bit higher in his shooting.
Yeah. And the big skill that he has that he's displayed so far is just the decision making and passing on the ball. He's been exceptional in that regard so far in the NBL. When I say I'm not quite as high on LaMelo, like I think he's a lottery pick versus being you, yeah, where I would imagine you have him like in your top five right now, right?
Yeah, he's number three. Of course, that's fluid just based on who I've seen. Like even guys like Anthony Edwards have to show, they have to prove themselves. Like as far as feel, there's a lot of deciding factors that haven't been played out yet. I've just seen probably like 10, like counting Spire games, I've probably seen like 20 plus Melo games. So I feel pretty good about him knowing what he needs to improve on. And I think most of what he needs to improve on, a lot of it is fixable.
Yeah, like I've been more impressed with Melo than RJ Hampton, for instance.
It's not close to me.
Yeah, like I think that Melo has been much better than RJ Hampton. So we'll see where it goes from here. I am excited to watch where LaMelo continues to kind of fall into place as the season goes on. Let's move on. Let's talk about some prospects now. We're going to talk about wings. We're not going to go like super in depth like we did with the lead guards last time, just because there are fewer wings in this class. Like guys will emerge and we'll talk about them as the season goes on. But coming into the season, this is not what I would call a wing heavy draft. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I would definitely agree with that.
I'm actually like very disappointed in the level of wings that currently exist that I feel confident in being first round picks. The first one, I guess that like we're not going to talk about Denny in this one just because I think of him more as a forward. Like he's 6'9". He's kind of a point forward type. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. And I think just to lay this out for the listeners, like we thought about these wings as more of like 2-3 wings rather than like forward, like 3-4, for example. So that's kind of some of the delineations are difficult because there's not a lot of difference, but that's kind of how we tried to rationalize it.
Yep. So let's go to Scotty Lewis, who is my top rated wing going into this year. And Scotty has some very real concerns. I would say. And by the way, we're going to split out and do another podcast about guys that we're calling forwards. So guys like Jaden McDaniels and Precious Achiuwa and players like that. So we're not including those guys in this one. So Scotty Lewis is my top wing, and that is concerning, even though I love Scotty Lewis unconditionally.
Yeah, I mean, the kid just sounds like he's incredible to be around, like an infectious personality. Obviously a very, very high level, at least run and jump athlete, some of it functional. But when you have that intersection of great intangibles plus great on the floor athleticism in certain respects, I get the allure. You see most sites, I would say, have him as a top 10 pick. Is that fair?
Yeah. I don't know where I'll have him in my first mock. I'm really going to have to think about it. I have some real concerns about the offense right now.
So do I
say that. His feel is fine on offense. Like I think he actually does make some fairly advanced reads, but I feel a lot more comfortable utilizing him like in the dunker spot right now than I do like as a secondary playmaker on the perimeter or as a space the floor shooter.
Yeah, which is a concern via skill level because you don't see a lot of wings in the dunker spot. You know what I mean? Especially in the modern game, like those are fives or maybe fours in some offenses. Like it's, you're not putting wings in the dunker spot.
Yeah. Unless you're TJ McConnell,
unless you're forced to, I should say.
Yeah. And you don't want to be forced to do that with the guy you're taking, you know, in 10th overall or something like that. Now Scotty Lewis's jumper, he has like kind of an arm twist, which is concerning in terms of his shot. And I think it leads to inconsistent release points. And he has like this wildly high arc on his jumper. So I think that there are going to be some real points of growth and some real development that he's going to have to undertake with the jumper. But nonetheless, his defensive ability is unmatched. Like, I was at Nike Basketball Academy, and like just watching him D up like guys like DeMar DeRozan and Bradley Beal, like he can already bother those guys, which is very rare for a freshman in college to be able to say.
Yeah, I'm not worried about his on-ball defense, his quickness and like the length and just his general level of athleticism. Maybe some of like the high level strength against those big power wings, that would be an issue. But as far as just movement ability, not concerned at all there. I want to see how it plays in more of a team defense construct. Like, what kind of reads is he making? This kind of goes back to his IQ. I'm probably a little bit lower on his
He's like, he is all over the place in off-ball defense. Like, he's trying to make...
I know he's active, but I don't know about the exact specific
IQ. No, I know. I actually mean it as a negative. Like, he is... Okay. Yeah, he is not someone that I would count on to be in the right place. Like, what? You want to be in the right place as a positive defender, like, 90% of the time, probably? He's not there, I will say. He is regularly out of position, and he will he has this tendency to communicate where other people are whenever he's not in the right spot, which is like kind of fun to watch. Like, it comes from like a good place. It really, like, it's not like one of those things where he's blaming other guys. It's just like, there are these things he's gonna have to figure out still.
Yeah, and that's where I kind of see his game. Like, he is active. I just don't know if I think those kinds of defenders tend to get a little overrated when it looks like they're trying super hard, but they're not really playing good defense, if that makes sense. So I want to see his decision-making on both sides. I'm probably a little lower on his offensive decision-making from what I've seen. Out of control a bit too much. Like, the skill level, is he going to be able to shoot off the dribble? Does he have any kind of creation ability? And of course, you were lower on his skill level as well. I'm just saying, like, there's a lot to work out with him. I get the foundation of the athleticism and the intangibles and all of that. I do like him. But I'm not sure if he's skilled or smart enough yet to be like a high level prospect, in my opinion.
Yeah, he'll be like late lottery for me, something like that. It's hard to find guys in this draft. Like, if we were talking last year's draft, like, he would not be a lottery guy for me. But it's just hard to find guys that you feel confident in succeeding. Basically, like, I think Isaiah Stewart, we'll get to him later when we do like bigs, but like, I think Isaiah Stewart is basically like bigger Montrezl Harrell, kind of. And I'm gonna have Isaiah Stewart at like 6 or 7 on my board because I just feel good about him being like productive and valuable.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Like, he'll be lower for me just based on positional value, but like you said, it's more of like, you know what he can give you. And I think a lot of it, again, we're very early in the process. A lot of these guys will work themselves out. There'll be movers just right now. That's why I don't really believe in mock drafts, especially this early. I mean you're of course obligated to make one for The Athletic, or sure. you do one there, and a lot of almost every site does. But I think it right now, it's just at a point where we need more information. A lot of these incoming freshmen, we've never seen them in structured environments that actually you have to do basketball things you'll have to do in the NBA.
Yeah, like, I don't think Isaiah Stewart should go in the top 7, but I also feel the most confident of him ending up in the lottery because he is just going to be like the most productive freshman outside of Cole Anthony this year. Like, he's going to average like 17 and 12 or something for Washington and just be like a monster. You know?
Yeah, he's definitely going to be productive, and I think he made a great college fit, not just because I'm from here, but just because of the 2-3 zone and like not really probably bringing to the surface his biggest weaknesses. But yeah, I do feel like he's going to be very, very productive this year.
The next wing I've got is Khalil Whitney, 6'7", 7-foot wingspan, just a ridiculous athlete, but doesn't quite always bring out that athleticism functionally on the court. Also has solid shooting mechanics. It's just inconsistent, and he needs to like rep through some of the concerns. So.
Yeah, he's another guy. I just want to see the IQ and like what his instincts are on the floor. You see some flashes of his. I mean, the athleticism is there. Like we talked about in the past, the shot making is going to be huge for him because he's not like a great passer by any means. He's not really creating for others. It's going to come down to the general shooting, and then if he can give you some isolation, kind of one-on-one shot creation. And I think you noted he was at Nike, I think, and you noted his competitiveness when he got really fired up with DeRozan, for example, and he started being more engaged defensively. I just want to see the consistency elements of that.
Yeah, I agree. I will have him in the lottery just because it's hard to find true wings that are 6'7 with a 7-foot wingspan that are elite level athletes that just can do a lot of different things. But
sure.
I don't, again, like this is a guy that I don't feel great about having in the lottery.
Yeah, for me, he would not be in it right now. I would even have someone like Isaac Okoro over him pretty easily, and we can get to him coming up. But I just believe more of what I've seen from Okoro at lower levels than I have from Whitney.
So Josh Green is who I have next. Okay. 6'5 wing, long arms, athletic, another guy that can't shoot.
Yeah, I've felt like he's okay shooting. I think I just tend to be more optimistic now in shooting. Somehow this happened over the last 2 years with us. I don't know if Josh Green is like a bad shooter. I think he's fine, but I think he needs to be a really good one.
Yeah, here's what I'd say. Like, I hate the mechanics. He has like an elbow flare, and it tends to be a low arc shot that's like on a straight line. They actually go in at like a fairly reasonable clip. I just don't know how translatable it's going
to
be.
So your issue is more with like extending that to NBA range and how comfortable he can be in that. Like, when I've watched him play, like I watched him shoot up close to like Hoop Summit and stuff. He's been okay. He's been fine. I never thought that shooting was like a profound weakness. For me, it's more like, can he be a dynamic shooter? Can he come off motion? Like, his ball skills in the open court are okay. His ball skills in the half court, from what I've seen, in like a more tight-knit environment, I don't view him as like this high-level creator or anything like that. So I think he's going to have to shoot, and you're probably going to have convincing evidence this year that he can shoot.
I agree, but again, like, another guy, super high compete level, good defender. Yeah. Again, like, you're right, like, the touch is not bad. I have that in my notes here. I do think that he's going to have to overhaul the mechanics. The good news is, like, he's a monster in transition, and Nico is just going to hit him constantly out in transition. Like, it's
very, very good transition athlete. That's what's always popped in like Hoop Summit. He has those gliding kind of strides at times. And when you put him in bigger spaces, you can say that about a lot of guys, but he looks like, it looks really effortless for him at times.
So my next guy is going to be Wendell Moore, 6'5", 6'11" wingspan, a guy who plays under control constantly, great poise, very high feel for the game, good IQ. The jump shot has really improved. Having seen him up close at Hoop Summit and at McDonald's, actually, that was always the question. And he's still not the most like comfortable with it. He's definitely like a guy that is like drive first and second, take the jumper third. But I do think that like you can work that kind of tendency out of him at the end of the day.
I love the frame. If you watch him play high school basketball, I think I watched him in some South Carolina tournament, and he looked like Shaq on the floor. Like, if you see these prospects next to like most high schoolers, it's just incredible to watch. But I do think he's quicker than he gets credit for. He has some legitimate, not really like first step, but a little bit more, I guess, horizontal quickness is how I'm trying to describe it. He's not like this. He moves well. He moves pretty fluidly, and like in FIBA play, I like the way he moves on the floor. The free throw shooting has been great. He's another one of these guys where he's been a career like 80%+ free throw shooter on like over like 800 attempts. I do believe in the touch. He's got to extend that from range and show more confidence. I don't know about the handle as far as like creating like one-on-one. He's been kind of hit or miss there, but he is pretty skilled. He had some flashes in the Hoop Summit, and I do like the frame a lot, and I tend to bet on smart players like this. I just kind of want to see how functional the skill level is in the half court this year offensively.
Yeah, what he does really well is change paces. He's really, really good at changing speeds and getting guys off balance. The like change of direction stuff, like the crossovers, like I haven't seen a whole lot of that, but like hesitation moves, pump fakes, all of that stuff just to get like an angle on a defender. He has all that in his tool bag already, and I think he's going to be pretty good utilizing that for Duke as long as they can space the floor a little bit for him, which we'll see. Lots going to depend on Trey Jones and Vernon Carey there, but they can put some lineups together where I think he can be really useful as a floor spacer or as a driver surrounded by some spacing with guys like Joey Baker and Alex O'Connell, and if Jack White's knocking down shots, and obviously Matthew Hurt is a great shooter. So there are ways to make it work. I just worry if Duke is going to be a prototypical fit for what his game is right now.
Yeah, which is also, it makes it a little more trying. I think you're going to have to watch more of his film, maybe even like the synergy as far as creation, and get those flash plays. I don't usually like relying on flash plays, but sometimes you have to in college when they're not put in certain positions. So I want to see how he runs pick and roll. How does he knife through tighter confines attacking the basket? Again, how does he get to his pull up off the bounce? You noted the lack of shake to an extent. I do want to see a little bit more of the high level dribbling. That's something that I feel the worst about right now based on some of his film, is just his ability to really create space off the bounce.
Next guy here I have is someone that I don't know if he's going to actually end up in this class just because of injury concerns, Brian Antoine. So Jay Wright came out and mentioned at the Big East, Media Day, I guess it is, that redshirting is not off the table for Brian Antoine due to the shoulder injury he has. He just hasn't gotten on the floor yet, or hasn't, like, in a way that is, like, high level, at least. And the Villanova system tends to be one that takes a lot of time to learn. Like, they want very specific things from their guys. Like, the jump stops get a lot of publicity, and just being able to communicate and switches defensively, obviously, as well. So I don't necessarily know, but I will say that, like, from a talent perspective, I think Brian Antoine is a one and done type, just because he is a really, really good shot maker and the kind of guy who can get to his shot at his age, at least when he needs to.
From an athleticism and quickness standpoint, he's at the tops of this class from what I've seen. Like, his first step, his burst, all of that is there. It's just, for me, I watched more, and I was not enthused with the handle just being out of control. I think we mentioned him on the last podcast, and that's where I thought Villanova would be such a good fit eventually, is just ironing out the footwork and really getting a better handle on his drives, like using the right foot. And, you know, jump stops, all of that stuff, I think is going to be good. And this guy is, again, someone who's shown shooting touch. It's not like he can't shoot the ball. There's some promising indicators there. It's just, for me, it's more like the feel level. Like, can he create for others at all? That's why we probably had him in the two guard, or like the wing spot instead of the lead guards, is because of the lack of passing feel kind of disappears at times in games too. There's a lot of things to prove, but as far as athleticism and applying functionally with enough shooting and enough, like, slashing potential, I think he's really interesting.
All right, so Isaac Okoro is your guy, maybe a Stepien guy is the way to put it. I like Okoro. I am not as high on Okoro as you guys are, so I will give you the floor and give me the pitch on Isaac Okoro.
I think he has a chance to be a real wing stopper at the NBA level. I think that those guys, that umbrella gets cast too wide as far as considering guys. Yeah. I think that he actually has the ingredients outside. You'd love to see him have a little bit better length. That's just one drawback, but everything else he has. Like, he's huge. He's so strong. Really incredible footwork on the ball. I mean, he's some guy who he absolutely mirrors on the ball better than maybe any wing prospect I've seen. Even better than DeAndre Hunter as far as his footwork there goes, and he's more athletic. I love his strength there. I think he's going to be able to switch, and he's an outstanding off-ball defender. That's what I love about him, too, is, like, it's not just the switching. It's like he can make high-level rotations. He can protect the rim. I think teams will get creative on offense, and this is where the whole issue is, of course, is on the offensive side with the shooting, the lack of convincing touch, the mechanics aren't great. Like, he's a really good passer. That's what I feel good about in his offensive game. Like, if you could get him in a situation where he could be like a short roll guy, I think he'd be incredible. Like, but that's probably unlikely given he's probably going to be played as a wing. I don't know what he does offensively right now. That's the biggest issue outside of transition. Like, what does he do in the half court? But if you can work that out, if he shows skill development, if he shows shooting development this year, I love where he's pegged to go. Like, if he goes in the 20s, and this is how I look at it. I don't look at it like, oh, I have like someone top 5 or top 7 or top 10 right now. It's more like, where do I think the value is? And I love taking Okoro in the 20s right now, if that's where he ends up going, which is, we'll see.
Yeah, but you still need to have like a hierarchy of players, right? Otherwise, you're not like you would have Okoro in your top 14, I would assume, right now, right?
I would. I do have a hierarchy. I usually make a board, but I think the most valuable way to look at the draft is what players would you target in specific areas. It just, because sometimes players, it's hard to differentiate between like 8 and 13. Like, what's the big difference there, right? But I think if you make it so like they're in the same tier, and then you have like leans, you have targets in each team, that just helps you kind of assess the value in the class.
Right. But then like when you're on the clock with 5 minutes like on the clock, you still need to like be prepared enough to go, okay, for our specific scheme, we're taking this guy over this guy. You know what I mean?
Oh, no question. Well, and we're also doing it from a very generalist standpoint. We're
right,
doing
that's
team
a great
specific.
Point.
If you're building in like team specifics and like what you need to execute your scheme, absolutely. I think the board actually makes much more sense in that circumstance.
Right. So with Okoro, I will say this, like when I went to Hoop Summit and saw him up against like guys that had elite size, right? He did not look as big as I expected him to. Like, I think he is like 6'5". Like, or maybe this is a better way to put it. I don't think he's 6'6".
Interesting. Yeah, I know, he's jacked. That's what I was referencing more to big. Yeah. I definitely thought
long.
He was at least 6'6".
Yeah, he's super long too, which I think like makes up for it. And it like makes it to the height like matters, but it sort of doesn't matter. But he did not look as big as what, like, I expected. Like, this is not, like, a Chuma Okeke situation where Chuma is, like, 6'8" and is, like, huge and looks huge on the floor, right? Like, Okoro is, he is pure wing size to me. Like, he did not look, he looked like Scotty Lewis size. Except just okay. like stronger and thicker throughout his body.
He looks, I've never seen him in person because I didn't go to Hoop Summit this year as far as sitting close during the game. I did go to the game, but I was up a little bit and I didn't go to the practices. So he's just looked big to me on film. Like he looks like, yeah. obviously the build is there, but he looks like a 6'6 guy to me. What is his wingspan? I thought it was like +2 or something. I didn't think it was like convincingly big.
I would have guessed that he was like a 6, if he's like, let's say he's like 6'5.5, something like that. I would have guessed the wingspan was probably in the range of like 6'9, somewhere okay. in that range. Yeah. I mean, we can look this up. Like they take the wingspan measurement. So at the U17 World Cup a couple of years ago, or what, that'd be like a year and a half ago, it was 6'9.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. I thought when you said like really ridiculous length, we were talking about like a 7-foot wingspan. I don't see that on film, so I'm glad I'm not going crazy.
No, I think it's like a +4, something like in like the +4 range. Okay. So when I watch him, I 100% agree with you on all facets of him defensively. I worry about the shot and I worry about where you put him on offense. Like I'm just not entirely sure where yet. I agree with you that he's a really good decision maker. I agree with you that if I thought that I could play him at the four, I would love to utilize him in like short roll scenarios and let him just like kind of tear the defense out from the inside. Right. I don't know that he can play the four at this level or at the next level, though.
I think from a size standpoint and like a reach, I think that's the counter argument to him playing the four. I think as far as strength goes, I am pretty convinced on his strength, and he's gotten bigger since he's gone to Auburn. Like if you see some of his pictures, he looks just built. He's jacked. He's
got the frame.
Yeah, he's really big. So I think he might be able to, especially in the playoffs. And I tend to value that stuff higher. And I just, again, like, I look at this class and I'm like, where are the impact skills coming from? Where are the impact attributes, like from a projection standpoint? And like his defense, I think he's going to be the best defensive player in the country this year. I think you can make a case maybe like John Teske or something. But I think Isaac Okoro is going to be the best defensive player in the country. And what I love about it is he plays in the SEC. So he's going to be coming against these guys every night. And we get so many matchups that are valuable this year. Like how many guys do we get to see a go against Isaac Okoro? He's like a godsend from a scouting standpoint.
I will have Okoro like in the first round, like somewhere, like probably late first round, maybe like even in the 30s somewhere. So like I think that he has a real chance to be like a one and done guy. Like I'm not saying that like I'm totally out on him by any stretch. Man, that's heavy. I think to have him just because the offense is like a real worry.
Yeah, no, I know it is. But again, I think the passing's there. He's at least smart. I want to see him more in like creation settings to see what he's got. Like, I'm not saying he can do that stuff. That's what I'm most curious of. But I'm very sold on the defense. And again, I think that, you know, we talked about this in the past, these big wing types, that's really inefficient a lot of times for teams. Like they overpay guys. I don't think that's an efficient market. I like the fact that he's not going to be valued at where I value him. Like there's a definitely a chasm between those two things. And if I can get him from a value standpoint in the 20s and just hope that he can shoot and you can refine his mechanics, like that to me could be an impact winning player. And that's kind of what I'm looking for.
I think you can make a case that he will be the best defensive prospect in this class in terms of like best defensive player. I will take Xavier Simpson, John Teske. Give me the man, the god, Kyler Kelly up at Oregon State. I want probably Nimi Keita just in terms of like defensive value, right? Like these guys that are big are just like so valuable defensively. Diakite at Virginia is just like so ridiculous at executing their scheme and is a good shot blocker and can obviously defend on the perimeter. So like I'm not nearly as high on the impact defensively that he's going to make. Like I would be shocked if he makes the or if he wins the SEC Defensive Player of the Year award.
I think that's fair, and I was regarding more as like a prospect. Like I don't when I talk about college basketball, like I'm not as into actual college basketball as you are, so it's more like from a prospect e sense. Like I think Teske is kind of a prospect, so I guess throwing him in there for some made it seem more college-esque. But I do think that he has a claim to be like a top 100 player in this class. But from a value standpoint, I agree. I mean, like if that's what your gauge is as far as like rim protection and like that being more valuable, yes, than wing defense, I think that there's a legitimate claim for that. But I think that Okoro will do what he's supposed to do better than almost anybody else in the country. And I think he will be that kind of, for prospects at least, for sure. And even comparatively to the rest of college, I think it's really going to stand out, man.
And he's like 18 years old. So he's going to play half this season at 18 years old. So I think it's worth mentioning that and saying like, hey,
yep.
It's going to be impressive, I think, to see him play this year. Let's go with, is there anyone else that you think is like a standout guy that we have to talk about before we get into the fringy guys? And there is one more guy I'm going to mention. It's someone that fans of the show will obviously recognize, but is there someone else other than that guy that like we need to talk about as a elite player?
I don't know about elite player. I would say as a late first round pick for me right now is Aaron Henry. I think that he deserves mention here. I do like him. I think he's an NBA rotation wing. Like looking at his skill set, I think his feel level is really underrated. He's a very good passer. He's shown enough as a shooter, even some pull-up ability, even though I'm not super high in like his isolation. I do wish he was big. Like I think I've said this on the podcast before. If he was a legit 6'8", he would be a lottery pick for me right now. And that might sound like a hot take, but when you get players that are that skilled, he's really smart, too. I do like that. I don't like the fact that Jarrett Culver made him look small last year, and Jarrett Culver is like the tallest sub 6'7" wing I've ever seen as far as measurements. Like he just looks so much bigger on the floor to me. But I do like Aaron Henry as a rotation wing in the NBA.
Yeah, I would agree. Another Aaron that I think is worth bringing up is Aaron Nesmith at Vanderbilt. Aaron Nesmith is, I guess this is a good question for you. You were early on the Nesmith hive with me last year. Would you rather have Aaron Henry or Aaron Nesmith as a prospect right now?
I think Henry. Nesmith is a better off-movement shooter, and he shows a little bit more creativity off the bounce as far as getting to a shot, but I think that Henry is better at everything else.
I think I would agree with that, especially defense.
Yes.
Henry's defense is not, like, great necessarily, but I think at Michigan State it's going to be really good this year. You know, obviously he got lost occasionally last year defensively, and that's why he didn't play as many minutes as what his talent level might indicate. Nesmith got to play a billion minutes because Vanderbilt was a trash fire last year. I would say that Aaron Nesmith is interesting from a shooting perspective, and shooting is probably more important for guys that we're talking about right now than any other skill. Would you agree?
I mean, for their roles in the NBA, yeah. I mean, shooting is the most important. It's just how much do you bet on a guy like Aaron Henry getting a little bit better shooting when he has a solid foundation compared to Nesmith, who's ahead of him right now but doesn't have the rest of the package there.
Yeah. They'll both be – I will guess I will probably have Nesmith around – oh, man. It's hard. It's hard to come up with, like, 20 guys that you're excited about right now. Yeah, they'll be in the same, like, 15-guy range, basically, in terms of a watch list. Jordan Wara is probably worth bringing up. He won preseason ACC Player of the Year, if I remember correctly, at the Media Day with the ACC. Shooter, that's about all I got for Jordan Wara. He is a good shooter, and his bounce is underrated, I think, if he can load off of 2 feet. Improved as a driver last year whenever he forced guys to get off balance when they were closing out on him, and you obviously have to close out heavy on him because he's such a shooter. But man, the shooting is really the only thing I buy into with Wara as an NBA player.
Me too. And I think he's probably best utilized as like a stretch four, and I just need those guys to be better defensive players. Like that's where I'm at. I don't like these offensive fours in the modern game as much if you can't play both sides of the floor. So that's why I'm a little lower on him. I like the quick release, and he shows a little shot diversity as well, and he's okay when he has space to load up like you noted, but I don't see a bunch else there. Very, very good college player, of course.
Cole, it's time for the main event.
It's about time, I would say.
Isaiah Joe, just the absolute god, the legend, just an absolute chucker in the best way. But I guess, like, are you a chucker when you're a 55% three-point shooter? Like, is that possible whenever you're making 99% of your threes?
I would say it's not possible to be a chucker when you're as smart as Joe is. I think chucker is kind of like, we say it in like the funny sense and stuff, but a lot of people view that in negative connotation, like you take a bunch of bad shots. Like Joe, to me, is a very, very intelligent player, and that's why I like him so much.
He takes some bad shots. What's...
He takes some bad... Wait, they're hard shots, but I don't know if they're, like, bad for him. You know what I mean? Like if he's contested, he has, like, a jab step from 28 feet, I'm fine with him taking that. You know what I mean?
He is a 42% three-point shooter over... What was it? He took, like, 250 attempts last year. He is really fun. I love Isaiah Joe so, so much. In terms of just watching him, like, he's... We might have to have an Isaiah Joe segment this year, because Isaiah Joe is just the absolute most fun player in college basketball that, like, 20% of college basketball fans actually know who the fuck he is. I will say, when guarded on catch-and-shoot attempts last year, according to Synergy, 49.6%. So, like, not a great number, because he takes a lot of pretty bad ones.
Yeah, I think, I mean, and as a size, it's not like we're talking about, like, a 6'8 guy who can just shoot over the top. Like, I guess you can bother his shot a little bit. Like, there's some stuff to work with there. But I think statistically, like, over 40% and over 10 attempts per 40 minutes pace adjusted for freshmen, it's only him, Steph, and Jamal Murray who have done it. Like, he's a really, really good shooter. And I think, like, the free throw percentage, 75%, is a little misleading. Like, if you look, I wrote an expansive piece on him. Like, you look back at, like, pre-college stats, and he was, like, almost 50% on threes on, like, 170 attempts in AAU. He was, like, a high, like, 89% free throw shooter his senior year. Like, I could shoot the shit out of the ball. And, like, I think there's a little more shot diversity there. Like, he literally put Hero's ass on the bench against Kentucky, because Hero could not stay with him off the ball, and he had that one step back three in Hero's face that was just, like, caused Calipari to yank him. So the big issue with Joe is the strength. He's very, very narrow. He's apparently added some girth this year. He, like, could not drive last year, and I think that was more of a issue with his strength level, just not being able to beat initial contact. Not an elite level driver by any means. He's not even a good one as far as that goes. As far as aggression, he's mostly looking to shoot, but I want to see how much the strength level function he plays into his game, because I think the most underrated part of his game is he's legitimately a smart basketball player. Like, I broke this down against Indiana in the NIT. Like, he made, like, 14 winning plays in that game. And you just rarely see such a concentrated dose like that from a freshman.
The only high major player in college basketball last season to take at least 60 shots off the dribble and make them at a 1.2 point per possession clip. He is just a monster shooter. Like, he is ridiculous in every regard as a shooter. I am a big fan. Obviously, Cole is a big, big fan. I think Musselman getting there is only going to help, because the level to which Eric is a better, like, coach as an offensive mind than Mike Anderson, as we saw last year, as Mike Anderson ran post up after post up for Daniel Gafford, is just... it's immeasurable. I think they're going to get him a bunch of shots, and I am excited for him to average 20 points a game this year.
Yeah, the best quote I've heard this offseason so far is Musselman. He was asked what he feels about the extended three-point line. He said, "I feel great. I have Isaiah Joe."
Right.
He's just like, yeah, like, that's that shit right there.
No joke. All right, where do we wanted to talk about Josiah James as well. I will give you the floor on Josiah.
I've really only seen him in FIBA at his size, and, like, he has pretty good feel from what I've seen. He moved better than I thought he would. Like, his acceleration, his open court athleticism was actually kind of impressive. I was expecting more of, like, this, you know, 6'6 guy who couldn't move that well. The shooting is an issue as far as, like, mechanics don't look super fluid. He can make some shots. I do think he's a little underrated, though, for bringing kind of, like, more of a playmaking mindset to a guy who has the frame and has really good size.
Yeah, he plays a lot of point guard, like, for any level he's ever been on. And I would imagine that at Tennessee this year, with guys like Jordan Bowman and Lamonte Turner, he's probably going to play a lot of point guard at Tennessee this year. His feel for the game and his ability to make plays as a passer at 6'5", 6'6", somewhere in that range, really, really impressive. He is a guy that can genuinely create plays for others with his vision. I am a pretty big fan. Like, I think he's... like, who would you take, him or Killian Hayes?
Oh, boy. I mean, I've seen so much more Hayes at this point when I've soured on him, but I have to lean Hayes until I just see certain things from James.
Sure.
I agree. Like, his size, like, that's what I'm getting at with, like, the point guard, like, just how big he is and how he moves with having playmaking skills. Like, getting big playmakers is super dope.
Getting big playmakers is super dope. What a statement.
Thank you.
What other wings do you want to mention here?
God, there's a lot we can really go through. It's just how like impactful are all these guys? Like some returning guys like Devin Vassell. We have Aaron Wiggins, Joe Wieskamp, Nate Hinton. Any of those guys?
Time out. Your first name was Devin Vassell at Florida State. I love that.
Well, I was just going through like by how I have him ordered on my watch list, and he's the top guy right now in the ACC as far as order. So I kind of just read across the screen.
Devin Vassell. He's like 6'6 and like a very real NBA prospect. Shot 42% from three last year, but played like 20% of Florida State's minutes.
Yeah, he did not play very much. I did watch a good amount of his tape, actually. He's a pretty smart player, honestly. He's got good length, but he's like hyper poor man's Mikal Bridges without that level of touch, and I don't really trust his mechanics at the top of his release yet, but just someone to keep an eye on.
I'm like not 1,000% sure that Devin Vassell starts.
It's kind of interesting. Well, this team has some definite players. I got four guys on my watch list here, so that's yeah,
like PJ Williams is obviously one of them. I would assume we should probably talk about him, right? Like it's hard to say, is he a winger? Is he a four? Like, I don't really know where to classify him. Do you want to talk about him now or on the next one?
Yeah, I had him more as a forward. I think we could probably throw him in that discussion. I think he's probably better suited for that.
Yeah, I think I would agree. But like what? They're probably going to start Trent Forrest at the point. They'll definitely start MJ Walker. Kind of just depends on what they do with PJ Williams, I guess, right? Like, I guess Vassell probably will start.
Yeah, this is your area of expertise as far as like college lineups. I'm not really sure. I know they're pretty deep.
So let's talk about Wieskamp, because Wieskamp entered this year's draft. He popped up on my top 100, in the 90s at one point. There's a freshman last year, 6'6". I want to say has like a 6'8" wingspan, 6'7", like a 6'8" wingspan, something like that. 63% true shooting percentage, 42% from three on 140 attempts. Very good foul shooter, plays a really, really smart game as well. I think he plays in the NBA and is a draft pick at some point.
I agree. I mean, his ability to make shots off the catch is legitimate. I'm just not really sure what else he's good at necessarily outside of being, you know, 6'6" and having a pretty good frame. Like, he's not a dynamic off movement shooter. He's not going to really get to any spots on pull-ups, for example. And defensively, he's okay, but I don't really see him being like any kind of impactful defender as far as like a dynamic switch guy or like a really, really high level team defender. So I just don't know if he has enough functional athleticism to really apply like ancillary skills to his shooting.
So you mentioned Nate Hinton at Houston. Yes. I will say that, so most people are more excited about Dejan Giroux. He is like more of like a lead, but he's 6'5" with like pretty reasonable length. So maybe we can like group those two together. So Hinton is 6'5", has a really good frame, knocked down the occasional three last year. He did play like, I don't know, like it felt like more of the four last year to me, because they played all those like super small lineups with like Robinson Davis and Armani Brooks. So I don't know, like I want to see what he looks like defensively more against like actual perimeter players, I think.
Yeah, and I thought we talked about Giroux on the last podcast. I could be wrong, but if we didn't, we should just give him brief mention here, because he's definitely like a legitimate prospect for me. Maybe not like a first round prospect, but I do probably have him in like the top 70-ish right now as far as
Giroux. He's like watch list guy for sure.
Yeah, so like his hit, I mean, just really quickly, his playmaking off the bounce, like his ability to like actually make pick and roll reads at his size, some of the length extension on finishes is pretty alluring, like the stride length as well. So there's some stuff to buy into, again, like bigger kind of playmaking type of guard. With Hinton, I have the same issues and the same question marks as far as how quick is he laterally. I think I've seen some bad tape of his there. He's an exceptionally smart player. Like, I really like Hinton's instincts. Very, very good rebounder. You see him use his eyes to like track balls off the glass. Very good there. How much does his offensive game play out? He kind of has, who's the kid that went to Florida last year who is the senior? Hudson, is that right? Jalen Hudson?
Jalen Hudson, yeah.
I've kind of seen their mechanics shooting the balls a little bit similar. They're both like, they get a lot of rise into their shots. It's not like a really like set shotty, like you can expand to greater ranges, even though Hinton did shoot well. He's great free throw shooter and he shot well. I think he shot reasonably well from three. I'm not sure about the range element. Can he shoot like long range NBA threes with that rise off the catch? But he's looking for that a little bit more. But he can pass. He's a smart player. I'm not sure if he's like an isolation level player. I'm not sure what his role is yet, but I do like him a lot.
One guy we forgot, I just realized, is Trendon Watford. Like, we actually very much need to talk about Watford.
Okay. To me, I always thought him as more of, like, again, more of that forward type. I didn't know if he was, like, a 2-3 wing. To me, like, he's pretty big, isn't he? Isn't he, like, 6'7"? He's built.
Yeah, and has, like, super long arms. Like, has, like, a +7 wingspan or so. I do think he is more of a 3. I think that, like, his shot actually will translate to being more of a 3 plus, like, wing stopper defensively. They might play him at the 4. Like, LSU has a million guards. Like, Skylar Mays is there. Javonte Smart is there still. Like, it might be worthwhile for them to play him at the 4. But I think his NBA position is a 3 in the vein of, like, Trevor Ariza.
Interesting. Yeah, I haven't seen him for probably 2.5 months. I watched, I think, a game and a half of his a while back, and to me, he always kind of seemed more of like a face-up 4, but I clearly have to watch more then.
Yeah, like, I would think that, I mean, like, they'll probably start Emmett Williams, Trendon Watford, Skylar Mays, and Javonte Smart, and then where they go with that, like, 5th spot. Do they play a true big? Do they play Darius Days as, like, another guy that's, like, 6'6 with, like, a bigger frame? I'm not entirely sure what they're going to do, but Trendon Watford is a very real prospect that, yes, I think is someone worth bringing up.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. Just the last guy I mentioned, that initial foursome I gave you, Aaron Wiggins, just a guy from Maryland to keep their eyes on. One of the best catch-and-shoot guys in this class, I think. He's a pretty damn good shooter. I'm not sure if he can really do much else right now as far as, like, creation or, like, defensively. He doesn't really pop for me either. So I'm just kind of curious. We know he can shoot off the catch, and I think that he's one of the best shooters, maybe not in this class, but he's a very good shooter. We'll see what else he can do.
Yeah, Samuel Williamson at Louisville as well. He was always, like, kind of a mid-range killer type, but he's expanded that range out to 3. I am not sure if he's going to be a one-and-done 2020 or a 2021, but I think he's a first-round pick at some point when he decides to come out, because he can really shoot it. He has great feel. He has great hesitation moves, like, can change pace, knows how to get guys off balance. I am a big fan of Samuel Williamson long term.
I haven't seen much of him. I think he only in the McDonald's practices, and he immediately looked like poor man's Jason Tatum to me as far as the fluidity shooting off the dribble in the mid range, especially as a shooter. I buy the intrigue. I haven't seen enough of him to really comment on, like, his feel or, like, his defense or anything like that.
Yeah, I think that that's reasonable. I'm trying to think. Who else? What other wings do we need?
Let's go really quick. Miles Powell, just someone we should mention.
Sure.
I think that he's, again, one of the best shooters in the country, probably. Can shoot from NBA range, off movement especially. He has pull-up ability, too. Pretty dynamic shooter overall. I think he's a little underrated as a passer. His defense is just not good. That's the problem with him, is, like, at that size, he's just not a good enough defender. But I do like – I think he's underrated as a – as not necessarily a decision maker, but I think his vision's okay, combining that with his shooting, which I think he's going to get NBA looks. Like, it would surprise me if he wasn't at least on a summer league roster.
I would agree. He's definitely going to be on a summer league roster. I think there's a very real chance that, like, he gets drafted just because he's going to average 25 points a game this year. Like, he is a genuinely elite shooter. I think he's, in my opinion, like, having watched them a good amount last year, like, I think he's better than Marcus Howard, for instance, at Marquette. Xavier Sneed at Kansas State. Do I remember correctly that you liked him at one point?
I'm not a huge fan. Like, I don't have much to say about him. I don't know if I've ever voiced, like, anything positive for Sneed. He's fine. He's a good college player. I just don't know what his NBA role is, really.
Generally agree. Like, basically across the board on that. Trying to think. Who else do we need?
You have a
big list, so let's roll with who your list is right now, because you have people in front of you. So Romeo Weems is going to DePaul. He's like this 6'7" forward. I think of him more as like a forward. I haven't seen like a crazy amount of him though.
Yeah, see, I've seen mostly FIBA. I say most entirely FIBA, and he mostly played the four there. Very, very good defender. He's got outstanding hands, like very, very good defensive recognition. But when you watch more of like his FIBA tape, or not his FIBA tape, his high school tape, and like his ball handling really pops. He has some legit dribble moves. So I think there might be more wing skill there than we've seen at the highest levels of play that he's played at as far as FIBA. So that's why I kind of threw him in here. I do. if I saw just FIBA, I would agree with you 100%. I would put him in the forward category. He might be there anyway. That's probably where he's best. I just wanted to mention him quickly because I think there's some genuine intrigue with his defensive ability, his passing, and if he can handle the ball at the level that he's shown flashes of, I think he's really interesting. And the shooting again is going to be the swing skill for him, but there's enough there as far as the indicators, like free throw percentage and stuff, to have some kind of optimism.
Can I mention Sam Merrill real quick?
Yes.
I think Sam Merrill is a very real prospect.
Okay. Sell me.
He is the best shooter in the country. That's kind of where it ends. Like, I think he is, full stop, the best shooter in the country. Just, there's not really another way around it. Unguarded catch and shoots last year, he was at 82.2 effective field goal percentage.
That'll do.
Yeah. I don't think he can do anything else at an NBA level. Like, just straight up, but he is genuinely the country's best shooter and is worth like bringing up at least.
Yeah, to me, he's someone who could probably get like maybe an exhibit 10 or some kind of a contract like that in the league, just a shot and see like how he can hang with better athletes. And typically those guys do get looks in the league. I'm a little skeptical that he has anything else, like you noted. I tend to be a little bit more suspect on guys like that.
Yeah, no, I think that's 100% reasonable to be suspect on guys like that too. I'm trying to like run through random college teams now. Who else do you have on your list right now?
I have about 8 more guys, and we can kind of streamline this. So going off mid-majors, 2 guys that Mike Gribanoff is a huge fan of. This is like, he's been all over both of these guys. Trevelyan Queen of New Mexico State and Vince Williams of VCU. I don't know if either one of those guys is like a definitive prospect. I do like Queen as far as his IQ, his athleticism. I think he's a little raw offensively, but he's someone to really watch for that is under the radar. I'm not sure if I've heard anybody talk about him on a national level.
Yeah, he came off the bench for New Mexico State last year. Like, it's a wild
I'm just
one.
Saying. Like, if you look at like his steal and block numbers, though, like his production, and like if you per 40 it, it looks unreal. And if you watch his tape, like he does blow up some actions as a team defender. He's a really good athlete. It's more about like, does he get the notoriety and can he kind of harness his skill level and that kind of polish offensively? Because that really stuck out as a negative to me when I watched him. I've only seen 2 games.
Isn't Gribanov one of the Skylar Flatten guys? Like, is a big Skylar Flatten guy?
Oh, that I cannot attest to. I'm not sure.
I think I remember Gribanov being like in on Skylar Flatten, who just signed with the Heat. Because I was like, I would have put like Skylar Flatten in my top like 160 or so last year, like in terms of guys. Okay. Like, I liked him enough. He was like San Diego State's like 3rd best player, but he's also like a 40% 3-point shooter and could do some things. Vince Williams is the kid for VCU that like comes off the bench and plays the 4, right?
Yes.
I don't know enough about, like, I remember watching him play last year and was like, oh, this kid looks like everyone else on VCU's team, something between 6'5" and 6'7", and seems like he can shoot. Or like seems like he can't shoot. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's kind of what, like, he doesn't really pop. In like the games I watched, I wasn't like, oh, this guy's a legitimate prospect. But just looking at his numbers and looking at the holistic kind of sample that he's put on, I think he's kind of underrated. He's not going to come out this year. So this is more of like a guy in the future. I'm just kind of naming off my last 8 guys here. One more guy in the international really quick. Would you qualify Terry Armstrong as a wing, or is he more of a forward?
I don't think he's like a great prospect. So I don't like, he's a wing for sure for the NBA level, but yeah, like I'm not really a fan.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. It's hard to say because he's not really playing a ton for his team in NBL play. I did see one play where he did come off a curl and shot over the top of someone, and that's what his allure is to me. Watching some of him, I think he played Spire at lower level, and just watching his shooting off the dribble and kind of his fluidity, I think that is something that this class doesn't have a lot of. We've talked about the wings in this class aren't very good, especially on like pull-up shooting and that, as far as that goes. So if Armstrong's going to make it, I think that is going to be how. But there's, of course, some questions with his character as far as like the grades example, as I know it in high school. Do you have anything else to add as far as him, as far as like anything negative?
I don't, in terms of like negatives. I don't really care about like guys that can't make grades necessarily. Like, as long as they can learn plays, like that's fine. Yeah, I mean, like, he's a super athlete. He just doesn't really know how to play from what I've seen. Like, he's just like not a high feel player from everything that I've watched. Couple of AAC guys that probably will be in this draft, definitely will be in this draft. Jaron Cumberland at Cincinnati. Will probably play some point this year, but he's definitely a wing long term. Shot it a little bit better from distance last year, but went to the G League Elite Camp and was a he was one of the worst players there, to be honest. Like, just wasn't athletic enough. Didn't shoot the ball well. It was tough. I'm intrigued. Like, he does have high feel. He has scoring instincts, big, powerful frame. I just think he's probably more of like a four in Europe type of guy. Quentin Rose at Temple, 6'8", guy that, you know, has been on the radar now for like 5 years, it seems like. We'll have to finally declare he just can't shoot. That's a significant worry. If you can't shoot, I have real concerns.
Yeah, I took Rose off my watch list, apparently. I was going to mention Cumberland. That's one of the guys, and I have nothing to add. I completely agree with everything you said. One guy in the SEC really quick, Skylar Mays. Do you have any thoughts there?
Did we talk about him with the lead guards? If we didn't, I'm sorry. I'm a big fan. And like Javonte Smart, too. Like, both of them are kind of combo-y guards. I think Skylar Mays is like a very real prospect that will be in my top 70 to start the year.
I'm trending that way. I've gone back and watched him a little bit more. And I think he's a little underrated athletically, for one. And I think shooting the ball, we'll kind of see what the degree is there as far as how functional that is. But I do think he's not getting enough credit as a prospect. I think that I'd probably have him in that same range that you do.
A couple of Big East guys, Najee Marshall.
Yeah. Stepien Reiter, Zach Milner, huge Najee Marshall guy. Probably the biggest I've heard. He's someone who I've got to get back and watch him. I haven't seen too much of him or Scruggs lately. I got to go back and do that, but he has proponents.
So I will say that I have not been a fan of Najee before. I've been told he had a really great summer at Xavier by people who were there and looks really great. 6'7", 7 foot wingspan, which is very useful, but a guy that is a 27% 3-point shooter who makes really poor decisions with the ball. He is a good, he makes the advanced reads, but then tries to like do it way too often and like doesn't have like a super tight handle. 21.2 turnover rate as a wing, even if you're like a semi high usage wing, that's just too high, I think. Trying to think. Mustafa Heron, any? I don't really think so, but do you have any strong thoughts?
I'm with you. I don't know if he does enough. Like, he's on my list. He's on my watch list. I had him more as like a kind of a combo forward type of player, but I'm not really interested.
It would have been way funnier if you just said no and stopped talking.
I try not to be overly harsh on this podcast, but sometimes it can come out that way.
Yeah. I don't really see anyone else in the Big Ten. The Big Ten's like super down prospect-wise this year.
Yeah. Yes, it is. I have the only remaining guys I have are in the Big 12. If you want to get to those, I can just run off a group of five and see if you have any thoughts on any of them.
Yeah. Let's start with Oshae Ogbaji at Kansas. Saw him at Nike Basketball Academy. He's a shooter, interesting shooter who should start and probably average double figures. And like, I think he plays a role for them and is a potential prospect down the road for sure.
I think I agree. I'm not sure if I'm totally sold on the shooting at a high level yet. And I just don't know what else he brings if he's not going to have that. There's just, you need to see more from him, which we're obviously going to. So he's definitely on the watch list. I think he's kind of interesting. I think maybe he got hyped up a little bit too much last year just because of how much someone like Grimes disappointed. And you compare those two guys, Ogbaji was like, oh my God, there's actually someone who's actually decent on this team on the wing. And I don't know if he's really like a real, real prospect yet, but he's on the watch list.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Iowa State doesn't really have anyone unless you're considering Tyrese Halliburton a wing, which I kind of do, but that's a discussion topic for another day, probably. Desmond Bain, just like a super high level shooter that has funky mechanics.
Yes, Bain was one of the guys I was going to bring up. Really built, really good shooter, pretty good in the open court. I'm not sure if he's a real NBA guy, if there's enough skill level there, or if he's big enough. Like, again, if this was like a 6'8 guy, I would be more interested. But he's on the watch list for me.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I will be interested to see if they use him a little bit at point next year. I think there's like a real chance that he could maybe do a little bit of that. You wanted to bring up a few Texas Tech guys. We didn't talk about Jamius Ramsey a whole lot last time. I'm intrigued, but not like overly optimistic for this year. You bring up your guy because I want to give you the floor on him.
Yeah, I don't know actually a lot about him. I've just heard positive reports out of Tech about Terrence Shannon as a shooter, kind of like a 3-and-D type. The IQ is, we don't know about that yet as far as what kind of instincts he has, but more of that 3-and-D who can really shoot the ball. And he's just gotten really rave reviews from some of the people that I know have attended, you know, Tech practices and stuff like that. So both of these guys, Ramsey, I think, had that monster. Didn't he have like a 40-point game overseas? I always viewed him as more as a wing, so I'm glad we're talking about him in this segment. But some, I think, have said he's more of a combo guard, not really sold on the skill level or necessarily like the shooting upside there. But both of these guys, I mean, Tech is an awesome program, in my opinion, like strength and conditioning. Multiple people have pointed that out. Over time, they develop guys really well. They seem to be high on Shannon, so I just think it's someone who I'm going to watch pretty much immediately when college basketball starts.
Do you have Isaac Lekekele on there, too?
I do, but I don't know really. He's probably one of the five guys I don't know a ton about. Like, I think I've seen one of his games 3 months ago. Do you have any thoughts?
Just like very basic ones, like not really much of a shooter as a freshman. Definitely an interesting playmaker. Almost like more of a lead, even though he has like the 6'4", looks like he's over 200 plus pounds from a frame perspective. The frame, the athleticism, all of that stuff is interesting, but I need to see more in terms of decision making and shooting, I think, so far. But yeah, you know, I can't like go like wildly in depth on him either.
Yeah, so my last team is Oklahoma. Did we talk about Bieniemy before? I know you're kind of high on him relatively.
Yeah, I thought we might have talked about him like briefly in the last podcast as like a pseudo lead, that like he's more of like a, you know, guy who defends lead guards almost more than like a lead guard himself right now. Did you watch any of him?
I haven't seen a ton yet. I'm kind of waiting because the other guy I was going to bring up here is, I know a lot of people would say Devian Harmon, but we talked about him on more of the lead. Talked about him as a guard. But the other guy that's really under the radar, and this is kind of a Ben Rubin special, is Alondis Williams, JUCO transfer. He has some really, really interesting tape, man. Like if you watch his pull-up game, I don't know about the athleticism, how it translates against, you know, the Big 12 or whatnot, but he definitely has a pull-up game. He has enough feel. I think he's going to be kind of a sleeper. Very, very interested to see him.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I don't know anything about him. I'm intrigued based off of what you've said. I will throw out another name, speaking of the JUCO ranks, Jaden Scrubb. He goes to a school named, I believe it's John Logan, I think it's in Louisville, if I remember correctly. He's committed to Louisville right now to go, but there are some, there have been discussions that, you know, he might end up going pro this year. He'll certainly at least test the waters and see where he stands. I would say he was one of like the 10 best college kids that I saw at the Nike Basketball Academy, where, you know, there were a lot of really good players there, obviously. I'm intrigued. Lefty playmaker, you know, kind of a guy who plays the lead at that level, but more of a wing, I think, long term, is like a 6'5" guy who can knock down shots. Good decision maker, good IQ. I want to see a little bit more athletically, and I want to see a little bit more from him defensively, but there's some intrigue there for sure.
Yeah. And I've only seen highlights of him on YouTube, so there's not much to comment on. I don't like doing that from such a small sample size, but I get why his shooting looked pretty good to me in the sample that I saw. And that's probably on purpose, but, I'm definitely intrigued.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's all we got. We went through a bunch of names. How many of these guys are you actually excited about? Because there aren't many for me.
Oh, God. end the podcast on a sour note. There's like right now, maybe like if I'm being conservative, maybe 10 that I'm like, I'm not legitimately excited, but like reasonably excited. I don't know if there's any wing in this class that I look at. Like I love Okoro, but I have to see so much offensively to get to the level where I'd be like incredibly excited.
Yeah, the number is like 2 or 3 for me. I'm like not enthused. let's end on a positive note. Review time. Please remember to leave ratings and reviews for the podcast on iTunes. Best NBA pod from Stargone X. The Game Theory podcast is to podcasting about the NBA, as Sean Livingston is to the 10-foot jump shot. So that's a good one. I appreciated that.
Yeah, that was short and sweet. I liked it.
Yeah, very, very simple. We can shout out to to be honest, I'm only here for the movie reviews. You could bring up Sam's incredible knowledge and analysis of basketball. The pre-draft coverage with Cole makes me sound more intelligent around the water cooler every year. But nothing gets me going like the flaming hot TV and film takes with Dieter. They could be a whole separate podcast about it. He's wrong about The Last Jedi, though, because that was trash. Strong disagree. I will say, saw Joker. Have you seen Joker yet?
I have seen Joker.
What did you think?
Oh, boy. Is there enough time in this podcast? I enjoyed it. I realized how it would be controversial, but I thought the acting was pretty incredible. I thought the score and like just the timing of everything, I thought it really worked.
I thought the score was the best part of the movie. I did not really like it. I was surprised. Like, I've known people that have like been working on that movie just like out here, and I've like been hearing about it for probably 10 months now, 9 months, something like that. Certainly since at least like January. And I was very let down. I just did not think it was actually very good at all.
Okay. That was going to be my clarifying point, is like, there's a difference between liking it and like it being a really good movie. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, there's a slight differentiation there.
I thought it jumped around a little bit too much in terms of what it was trying to say. I thought that the incessant laughter by Joaquin Phoenix took you out of what was happening in the film. It was just so over the top for a movie that was so grounded in realism that I really struggled with it. I struggled with Joaquin's performance because of it. He certainly did exactly what, you know, I'm certain that Todd Phillips asked him to do, he performed exceedingly well at it. Like, there are moments where he is just arresting on the screen. Like, you cannot take your eyes off of what he's doing. But I really thought that like it just bounced around too much, and that it felt like Todd Phillips thinks that he made like the best movie like about like mental illness, but the mental illness and the way it was covered really was a struggle for me. I did not think it was covered well. I did not think it was characterized well. And then there was one other issue that I had with it. I'm trying to think. Oh, it just my other point is like it just generally felt like knockoff Scorsese, but not as good. Basically,
I'm not as much of a film buff, so that's all fair. I think I liked how it jumped around, just because I honestly had no expectations. I didn't read any reviews. I didn't even know like what I knew, like the general premise of the movie, obviously, but I didn't know like any kind of specifics. So I kind of liked that you left and you're like, okay, like what exactly was real? All of that. I thought for me, and just the fact that it was like a total beating of a movie, like you could feel like every single scene, especially with the score and just kind of how it was delivered. Even if it did jump around, I just felt like you don't leave movies very often and you're just like, holy shit. You know what I mean? I'm sure that's what they're aiming for. So from that standpoint, I do agree with you, like the controversy around the mental health and that being maybe the biggest takeaway of the movie. But I was impressed. I mean, I didn't have expectations. I'm not like, oh my God, I have to go see the Joker like a lot of people were. I didn't enjoy it necessarily from like a liking it standpoint, because it's really hard to like that movie. But right. I did think it was pretty well done, and I think it accomplished what it set out to, and that it just made you think when you left the theater.
One other thing that frustrated me is, and this is like an actual spoiler alert, like I think that we've done a pretty good job of like talking around it. So if you don't want to have like a spoiler on plot, like please stop listening now. I thought that the twist where like, you know, he's very clearly not in a relationship with Zazie Beetz's character. Like I thought that was like totally unearned. It was like very obvious from the start. I thought that like this is all in his head and like not real. And the way that they reveal the twist is, I feel like you're supposed to think it's like this incredible, you know, unbelievable moment that's happening in the film, but it's just like it doesn't. It fell flat to me.
I think that's fair. Like I suspected the same. So it was like never like a big reveal the other way. Like I was leaning that way anyway. So I guess from an earned standpoint that you could make that argument for sure. I just kind of like how it didn't really completely keep you in the dark, because like you kind of knew, you kind of had leans on where the movie was going and what was real, what was not. But the fact that you didn't ever really know, I thought was just kind of effective. I like not having everything just spelled out for me clearly. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like the fact that, like, he goes into her apartment And is she's like, oh, like, you aren't, like, I think you're in the wrong apartment. And that, like, it's treated like a big reveal, because then they go back and flashback to the moment where, oh, she's not in the hospital room with him. Oh, she's not looking in the window of the shop with him. Like, I would have liked it to have been treated more subtly than that. Like, there's no subtlety in this movie at all. And that's, I think, that was a disappointment to me.
Yeah, I'm with that part. I'm with that comment you just made. I agree.
All right, let's get out of here, Cole. Please tell people what's going on in your life. Tell people what you're writing. Tell people what you've got.
Yeah, I haven't been writing a lot just because I've been trying to stay up to date with all these international guys. I probably watched 20 of them already in every single game of theirs. So I feel like I'm more prepared ever for this season than I've ever been times like 20. So that's been nice. And hopefully I'll be able to write more throughout the year, because I always struggle with how much time to allocate towards writing compared to watching and staying informed. So I feel like I'm operating from a stronger baseline. So we'll kind of see how that plays out over time. So I will eventually have some stuff out in the Stepien. Until then, I would say, as usual, continue to listen to this podcast.
Go to The Athletic. Keep me employed over there. We'll be back next week with some more breakdowns on prospects, I'm sure. Please go read the big prospect pages that I'm writing. I'm writing about every team's NBA prospects, including the ones that'll probably be on their G League team this year as affiliate players. So if you have big thoughts, like, we literally just decided to publish the Pacers one right now because Sam Amick reported that Domantas Sabonis is, like, apparently on the market somehow for trades. So yeah, please just go to The Athletic and read all of our great writers, but especially read the prospect stuff, because I think it's pretty good at least. So until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.